they're gonna get you by, 'cause the road is right here before us. And you know it goes on and on, drifting out into river songs. It's just you and Lady Faye, and could you believe it's just you.
Good afternoon and welcome to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. It's that time of the week and I'm Janaea and I'm going to be with you, your host from 2 until 5 today. And with me co-hosting is my very dear friend, Hope for Peace.
Cheers, Santa Cruz.
Welcome, everyone. We've got a great program lined up for you. Our first guest is Dr. John Hall, and he is the author of A New Breed, Satellite Terrorism, and we'll be learning quite a bit about that. And then our second guest is the same one we had last week, Rafael Moria, and he'll be talking about a Supreme Court decision just passed in Brasilia, that is impacting Indians and blacks and institutionalized racism that they've been experienced. Finally, it's being openly discussed. But Dr. John Hall is a medical doctor from San Antonio, Texas, and he's a board-certified diplomat of the American Board of Anesthesiology and a member of the American Academy of Pain Medicine. He is also an active member of the Mind Science Foundation dedicated to the study of human consciousness. He sits on the medical committee of the human rights organization's Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. And truly, we're going to be learning about this new threat that's been stalking many of us, and many of us know nothing about it. And he's going to be telling us what happens when Big Brother has gone too far, and he has. Welcome. Dr. Hall, are you with us?
Yeah, Janaea, how are you today?
Oh, wonderful. How are you?
Good.
Great. And I just want to begin by asking you how you became involved in writing the book and what's happened in your life and the lives of people that you know that you felt propelled to write this.
Well, I knew a little bit about the technology just from seeing internet blogs and things like that, and from some government contacts that I have. Then I was engaged to a girl that this happened to, and when I say this, the term right now is electronic harassment. And in her case, it was electronic harassment, which means hearing voices in your surroundings that are aimed at you, usually derogatory comments, along with organized stalking, And in her case, eventually break-ins into her home, and they were putting Rohypnol, a date rape drug, into her bottled water. And then it quickly turned to sexual assault. So that led me to, once I saw how little help the police were going to be, the next best thing was to expose the problem with a book.
Wow. And is this systematic? Is this happening randomly to people? And why? And how are they selected?
Well, from my own experience and from talking to other doctors, mainly PhD research type people that are looking into this, it does seem to be, for the most part, random. As you said, I'm on the medical committee of a group called Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, and they have about 1,000 members now, all people voicing these same complaints, stalking, electronic harassment, which is everything from hearing voices to being attacked with unseen directed energy weapons, and having their homes broken into.
My God.
Some of these people are whistleblowers, but for the most part, it's random, which leads us to think that this may possibly be a form of experimentation being perpetrated by the government.
Mm. And you had written that it's CIA-NSA technology, so it probably is, and it's being used basically to track, intimidate, and even read the thoughts of people. So they're experimenting.
I don't know if you've ever heard of MKUltra, but that was the original mind control studies of the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that ended in, the experimentation didn't end in the 70s, but there was a congressional hearing which brought forth information from the Freedom of Information Act on exactly some of the horror stories that were going on with MKUltra. What we believe is that this is a continuation of that same program using modern technology. Just unfortunately, with no release or disclosure of information through Freedom of Information, and we base that fact on that it does seem to be random. And as a matter of fact, your state, California, is being one of the hardest hit. I hear from victims from California on a daily basis.
And why is it being done? Do you have any idea?
Well, for a long time, the government has been interested in how to control behavior and how to control thought processes. And that's from a military standpoint, it was to create Manchurian candidates, people that could be brainwashed into performing certain operations and then have their personality reverted back to their original identity. That way they had no recollection of having done what they were sent to do. That was for a national security interest and military interest. Now that we have satellite technology, digital technology, it's gone a step further where the original MKUltra experiments, they were using drugs and electroshock therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy to basically brainwash people or put them in a remote hypnotic trance to be able to function as a Manchurian candidate. Well, now this can all be done with microwave energy. And one of the big researchers was Dr. Michael Persinger, who discovered that when the temporal lobes of the human brain are exposed to certain frequencies of microwave energy, that you can simulate alien abduction, make that person feel like there's people around them when they're actually in a room alone, and can alter behavior, cause somnolence, cause anger. It's really just a focused attempt at controlling human behavior and human thought. Which may go back to most of the governments today in the major countries are looking at a new world order or a one world government, and it quite possibly could be that this is being tested on certain individuals for later on being used on the entire population.
So this is worldwide. This is a global.
This is a global problem. Yes, it is.
Is it also happening in third world nations, or is it more...
We haven't heard so much from third world nations. Now, that may not, probably not because it's not happening, but because of their lack of ability to get online or receive any, of our radio or TV broadcast where it's being brought up. But I've certainly heard from people from England, from Ireland, from China, from India, Pakistan. Just about every major country in the world has expressed all of these same complaints. But here in the United States, there are several organizations like Freedom from Covert Harassment that all have, 600,000, 700,000 members with more and more coming forward every day now that the truth is finally kind of making it into some of the mainstream media.
And what are the technologies? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's kind of what we're looking into. Now, when I wrote the book, as I said, I do have friends within the CIA and the FBI, and I talked to them about, had anybody commercialized this type of technology, the ability to see you inside your home, you know, X-ray and forward-looking infrared-based imaging, can see you in your house.
Gosh.
The directed energy weapons are laser, microwave, particle beam, and ultrasound. And the two modes that they harass you with audio is microwave hearing, which is based on the Frey effect, which a lot of the Freys live there in California. Alan Frey was the doctor who discovered that they could use microwave energy as a communication form to basically beam voices into your head.
This is frightening and just sickening.
It is. And that's the problem, is when you have these victims come forward saying that I'm hearing someone talk to me in my head, well, the way it's designed, you can't record it, and someone standing around, you can't hear it. Only the targeted person hears it in their head. And with our current psychiatric community, if you're hearing something that they can't, then you get a turnkey diagnosis of schizophrenia or delusional disorder.
And how do you differentiate between someone who really does have a mental illness and someone who's a victim of this electronic harassment?
That is what we're working on right now. I'm actually in the process of setting up a summit meeting of myself and several other PhDs and medical doctors that are publishing and researching on this topic to form some criteria for doing just that. Now, right now, probably the best criteria for that is, if you have someone, an individual who's complaining of hearing voices in their head, and they're being stalked and their home is being broken into, that seems to be part of the template that's being used on a state-by-state basis. Every victim you talk to will say that their circumstance is a little different, that they're being victimized because they were a whistleblower, because they used to work for the government, or they had a relative who worked in intelligence. But the circumstances may be different, but the mode of which they're being attacked seems to be getting done by a template, because every victim is hearing voices, being attacked with directed energy, having their homes broken into, and being physically stalked by people in their area.
So what would someone look for? So they would be stalked, their homes are being broken into, and then you had written that women were being raped. And
In the case
without
here,
memory of it, and how does that happen?
Well, we did identify the perpetrators in the San Antonio area, and it was a private investigative group that is owned by a former FBI agent.
Wow.
And his son, who is a former lieutenant colonel with the DOD. So they definitely had access to the technology.
That's the Department of Defense.
That's right. And in this particular case, and other women in San Antonio, it was mainly being used for to perpetrate sexual assault, because if you put voices in the head of some people and it sounds like their own voice, then that's not you hearing a voice in your head. That's you perceiving what you think is your own thought. And a certain subset of the population will act on those extraneously implanted thoughts, subliminal control, if you will. So you break in, you put Rohypnol, the date rape drug, or GHB, into bottled water in the refrigerator, then you basically subliminally control that person to drink where you've put the drug, and then you sit back and wait, break in, and
so you wait out. Someone's waiting outside. Why? How can they tell when they've had that water?
Because they can remember that with the imaging, they can see you indoors. It is almost foolproof for the ability to commit sexual assault. In our surveys through Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance, 70% of the victims are female between the ages of 35 and 50. Almost all of them are either divorced or single and living alone, and virtually all of them have voiced complaints of drugging and sexual assault. So this definitely is being used as a sexual assault weapon.
So what can someone do to protect themselves or to prevent this?
Well, the prevention part, if somebody happens to see you and take an interest in doing this to you, or knows somebody that has access to the technology. Unfortunately, it's like
how
I said,
you know?
it's random targeting. My probably biggest suggestion to people who may be initially getting victimized by this is be careful who you tell. You know, we have support groups through Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance and Victims Advocates. One of them is there in California, Christine Lynn Harris, who I emailed you her name.
You did.
She has been made tremendous efforts in California to reach out to victims there. Because what will happen, if you go and tell a family member who doesn't understand this technology that you're being attacked by something they can't see and you're hearing voices they can't hear, it's usually a family member who puts you in front of a psychiatrist. Then you get a diagnosis, and then you're discredited from helping yourself from anything else. So what I suggest to people is to focus on the stalking. If you're being stalked, if your home is being broken into, definitely go to the police. Don't mention that you're the other stuff, that you're hearing voices and being attacked. But definitely give them plate numbers. Carry a digital camera with you, even a disposable. If you're being stalked, take pictures of the stalkers. It's not illegal to take a picture of someone in a public place. If someone's following you around, let them catch up with you, turn around, and snap their picture, because they count on working in their anonymity. If you start exposing them, probably some of it will stop.
So the stalkers want to be seen then by the victim.
Oh, definitely. It's not surveillance. It is true harassment and stalking. They make it a point to let you know you're being stalked.
Now, what is the whole purpose behind this? I just don't understand.
Well, as I said, we're looking at this from a governmental experimentation point of view, where they're really wanting to see, you know, what different types of operations it takes to actually break a person down mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stalking and the breaking and entering, usually nothing is stolen. They break in, they move your appliances around, they move your clothing around, they go through your stuff. You come home and you know your place has been gone through, but there's nothing stolen. And when there's nothing stolen, the police usually won't make a burglary report. And for the police to investigate, there has to be a felony committed.
Mm-hmm.
So the best you get is a breaking and entering or a criminal trespassing, which gets filed in a file cabinet and not pursued. But more than that, that's part of the psychological operation. To put someone in a victim mentality,
frightened.
You know, they're basically letting the victim know that we're going to come into your place, we're going to stalk you, we're going to do what we want to do, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's a form of social deprivation. And most of these forms of brainwashing and mind control techniques depend on social deprivation. They want you to sit at home thinking that there's nothing that can be done, that the police can't help you. And then you're truly a victim. Then you're just sitting at home and letting them bombard your mind and attack you with directed energy.
Now, the police can't help them because nothing has been stolen. If the person repeatedly calls, they're then discarded. They're not taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly. Repetitive
calls to the police.
Repetitive calls to the police get you in the same predicament. That's why it's very important to, before you make the call to the police, have some pictures, have some plate numbers. Even here in the state of Texas, our attorney general has a huge website dedicated to stalking. We're getting tough on stalking. Several years ago, the Department of Justice came out with a survey. Stalking in this country has gone up exponentially, 500% since their last study in 1996. And a lot of this is stalking by unknown individuals, not an ex-husband or an ex-boyfriend. It's being stalked by people you don't know. And even here, they say we're getting tough on stalking. If you've been followed by the same person more than twice, call your local law enforcement. Well, that fight against stalking isn't filtering down to the local law enforcement level. When you go to them and say, you know what, I'm being followed everywhere I go, they're kind of in the back of their mind seeing you as a mental patient to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of the things that we're hoping to address at this meeting we're having among those of us that are publishing on this topic, is to put a packet together to not only educate local law enforcement agencies on this problem, but educate the psychiatric community. Because even when you go to a psychiatrist and you put what information you can get online in front of these people, they still don't, they're not believing it. And that's not surprising to me, because if you look at the history of MKUltra, almost all of the original mind control experiments financed by the CIA were all headed up by psychiatrists.
Oh.
And most of these psychiatrists went on to be heads of the American Psychiatric Association. Most of them are dead now and were eulogized as being, you know, great doctors in their field and contributing to humanity when in reality they were monsters.
It sounds like the Nazi experiments.
It
have come
from
home
that.
To root. Oh. Somehow that doesn't surprise me at the moment. And, you know, I'm just remembering about 4 years ago, a friend of a friend, and I knew this woman quite a while too, and she was brilliant and always very stable, started complaining of hearing voices, hearing neighbors talking about her. So she'd have different friends come over and spend the night, and they wouldn't hear the voices. And she was terrified, and she'd hear it and be startled, and then she'd have these different burning sensations in her body. And to me, from what you're telling me, it sounds like she was one of those victims. But how do they put the voices of her neighbors? I mean, she said it was their intonation, the sound of their voice, in her head.
Well, for one way they do it is that when they're watching you, they're also watching your neighbors. That's one of the ways they facilitate breaking and entering. With this particular type of imaging, X-ray imaging and FLIR imaging from satellite, you can watch, you know, everybody that's around. They can break into your house when your neighbors are home because they know what position in the home your neighbors are in. And as long as they're not looking out a window at your front door, most of the break-ins are done with a key right going through your front door. So they are recording conversations among your neighbors. They can mimic the voices of the neighbors. They can record the neighbors' conversations and replay them for you. That's a way that is done. And that one of the most common complaints we hear is, like your friend said, that it sounds like neighbors talking about her in the distance in a whisper-type voice.
A whisper voice, that's what you said, yes.
And yeah. That is a form of audio harassment called elf wave harassment, and it's extremely low-frequency waves. It's bombarded at your whole home, but it depends on something vibrating or displacing air slightly to amplify it for you to hear. And that's why people will say, well, I hear it in water running in my home. Or I hear them through the ceiling fan or through the bathroom vent fan. And they'll say, it seems like they're following me all through my house, bombarding me with this audio, when in reality your whole home is blanketed with it. And as you move from room to room, whatever's vibrating in that room will finish amplifying the sound. Now, that is distinctly different from voice-to-skull, which is microwave-based hearing based on the Frey effect, and mm-hmm. you know, coined by Alan Frey from California.
Mm-hmm.
That is the people that are hearing voices in their head. A lot of the victims are actually complaining what your friend complained about, which is elf wave broadcasting, and that's hearing a very low-frequency audio wave that depends on vibrations in your surroundings to finish amplifying it enough for you to hear. But mm-hmm. it is still frequency specific to the individual. That's why if you were around her, she could hear it. She could hear them talking loud and clear, but you wouldn't.
Everyone else, so they couldn't hear a thing. And they would laugh, just wondering what had happened to our dear friend. And I understand, though, that she doesn't hear them anymore.
Yeah, and then we have quite a few victims that will experience this for 5 or 10 years, and then all of a sudden it'll stop. And that's usually because they've moved on to another victim.
Now, I know that you worked with thousands of people that were talking about this and coming to you with, must have been blanketed in San Antonio. Maybe it was a large area of experimentation, but she's the only one that I know of. And how have they overcome it, or are they still suffering?
Well, luckily with some coaching from those of us from Freedom from Covert Harassment and some of the victims' advocates like Christine Harris, we've kind of convinced people not to focus on it. And one of the best defenses is to ignore it. And over time, you learn to ignore it. When it first starts happening to a victim, it's very disconcerting because you in your mind, you think, well, they're seeing me indoors. They can see me, you know, when I'm, you know, having sex. They can see me when I'm in the shower. In reality, what they're seeing is an X-ray-based image. So, you know, although your privacy is being intruded upon, they're not seeing you like a TV or a true camera image. They're seeing an X-ray image.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's what really gets most people is when it first starts happening, you know you're hearing them. They're telling you what room of the house you're in and what you're doing because they can see what you're doing. But they're not seeing you in a flesh-and-blood type of picture. So, you know, once people understand that, then it's a little easier for them to just finally ignore it. Mm-hmm. What they want you to do is sit at home and focus on listening to them and that's the worst thing you can do. You need to go about your life. You know, don't become a social recluse. Do what you've got to do and do your best to ignore it. Because mm-hmm. those people have created their own prison as well. They're sitting behind a computer watching you 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And the best thing you can do to them is to not let them get to you.
And then as you appear to be unaffected, they get bored and go on to someone else because
and
they're testing, most likely.
Yeah.
It's an experiment to see what it is involved in breaking someone.
So your theory is that the government is paying their paycheck? Is that kind of what we're kind of thinking?
Well, it's complex. It's the CIA got busted with MKUltra. There were enough victims that came forward. Ted Kennedy called for a congressional hearing. One of them was called the Church Committee. One of them was called the Rockefeller Commission. At that time, the CI director tried to shred all the files that involved MKUltra, but he missed some that were in the Financial Committee. So that's where we got our information from Freedom of Information. Mm. Now, toward the end of MKUltra in the late 60s and 70s, they began doing this experimentation through front companies. Now that's termed agency sterile. Most of this is being done in an agency sterile fashion, meaning that the CIA and the NSA provide this technology to criminal groups in every state and then basically turn it over to them carte blanche to victimize whoever they feel like they want to victimize, while the government sits back and takes notes on how well it works, how long it takes to break someone, how far you can take someone. And there have been people driven to suicide by this. I have one individual in Mission, Texas. I mentioned him in the appendix of my book, Jesus Maldonado Mendoza. His mother-in-law actually committed suicide to get away from the attacks. And he took his case all the way up to high enough in the federal courts where he actually got a statement from the Alberto Gonzalez, the then-time attorney general, who basically said that that they did not find it unconstitutional to expose you to X-ray, to radiation using X-ray imaging in the home. So that's kind of what we're up against. We're up against a police state mentality in the government who really doesn't see anything wrong with invading our privacy.
Privacy of the mind. I mean, that's the most private place. And if
you think about the social implications of that, people being able to decode thought, you know, especially if you're a religious person, that, you know, when you go to church and you're in prayer, no longer is God hearing you or is the government hearing you. That's a tremendous social implication to this technology.
That's true. I wonder what it takes for an American to decide to kind of like take the other side and be the person who's doing the surveillance, because I would suppose that you understand that you're working against your family and your country.
And if they...
That's amazing.
Well, you know, what's amazing
is
the original doctors that sponsored some of these early experiments, they sat in Congress at these hearings and wrapped themselves in the cloak of national security and had absolutely no remorse. And some of these early MKUltra mind control experiments, they were taking women with postpartum depression, street people with drug histories, putting them under false diagnosis into mental institutions, exposing them to daily electroshock therapy, LSD, and various other chemicals to basically erase their personality and create a new personality. Several victims were dropped off back at home a year later with the inability to feed themselves, incontinent, didn't remember who they were. Some of these victims had to have family members teach them their identity. And these doctors sat in front of Congress and said, "I have no remorse. This was done in the name of national security." So, I mean, there are people that will do demonic work for a dollar in every state. I mean, there seems to be no limit to the number of people.
But
that
it's sanctioned.
That's true.
It was sanctioned by the government or the universities. And I heard you on another talk show not long ago, and you spoke about large law firms, not just any law firm, but they had to be large, and PI groups working together.
Yeah, this has been used as a weapon to drive people crazy that are about to be jurors on big cases. There's been several large law groups. One of them is an international law firm out of California that has access to this technology and has used it on several victims in the San Francisco area. I would let Christine Lynn Harris come on if you ever have her on. She'd be more than willing to talk to you about that.
I certainly will. I wish I had scheduled her today. I just moved, so I've been busy.
Yeah, but I wasn't able. PI groups seem to be the ones nationwide that are really kind of taking the helm at this. And most of them work in some shape or fashion for a law firm as well.
My God.
I wonder why more of it isn't covered in the media. It seems like such a story that we're... It's a
I just happened
very
to hear you once.
Story. Why do you think we don't hear more about it?
Well, probably because a lot of times the only exposure the media gets are testimonials from victims. Same thing. We know the Congress people know about this because just about every Congress person in every state has received at least one or two letters from victims in that state that are complaining of this. And a lot of these letters sound crazy, especially if you have someone who's not well educated, who really can't explain the technology.
Sure.
You know, or they're thinking it's a neighbor when it's not, or because that is another thing that most victims are convinced that it's their neighbors doing it to them, or it's got to be the FBI doing it. And in reality, most people, there would be no reason for the government to surveil you. It's usually a criminal element that's within your city that's doing the stalking and doing the electronic harassment. So the letters sound a little bit crazy, and that's why we're getting this summit meeting together with myself and several other researchers to try to publish a letter to the government with all of us with some credentials behind our name that have researched this to try to force a congressional hearing. So that's the only reason, or because it's hard to prove it, and the media likes to usually put their teeth into things where there's hard evidence. And this is one of those crimes where there's no hard evidence.
Except when there's a case that has been won, or there's a case in court, or there's obviously an actual sexual assault.
You still have to prove the electronic harassment part of that. And that's why the best we can do right now is to get the perpetrators in hot water by reporting the stalking and the sexual assaults without the electronic harassment.
And I really agree with you on the concept of media, because that's kind of what I'm studying quite a bit, and I ran across something interesting. One of the wordsmiths that's out there has changed the way that we don't say eavesdropping anymore. We say electronic intercepts.
Yeah.
Because it's cleaner, and people will support that. They won't support eavesdropping, so we change the language on it, and then it gets by a lot easier. Electronic
now there's
intercepts.
There's one thing that's happened recently that's going to have a lot of bearing on this fight. I do a radio show on Republic Broadcast Network weekdays from 10 to 11 called The Control Factor, and we try to expose most of this as best we can. There was a CIA agent recently arrested by the FBI for trying to sell frequency scanning and frequency spectrum equipment that is used for public harassment in the private sector. He tried to sell it to a company who ran the serial numbers on this equipment and found that it was made specifically to CIA specifications, and they reported the guy, and he has been arrested. Now, the CIA is still currently denying that he works for them.
Oh, I'm sure.
But this has been all over the news, and the equipment he was selling is equipment that you use to scan for this type of directed energy. So that actually is a pretty positive step, at least in our fight.
Mm-hmm. Now, what can you, obviously Congress knows about this, if a lot of people are sending letters to them. Do you have any idea why they haven't had any hearings about it?
Well, this is such invasive technology that for one of the reasons, just about everybody in our government right now has a skeleton in their closet. The CIA and the NSA have their own agenda, regardless of whether Democrats or Republicans are in office. So a lot of it may have to do with, you know, what kind of goods the CIA has on each one of these representatives or senators. Now, there is one legislator that has showed some interest in this, and that's Representative Jim Guest from Missouri. Now, he's a state House of Representatives member there in Missouri, but I met with him in person several months ago. We went over all of the history of covert experimentation on the public, all of the research that's being done on mind control technology. I was on his radio show four Sunday mornings in a row with Dr. Terry Robertson, another researcher in this. And he finally, a representative guest, said, I'm drawing a line in the sand. This may be political suicide, but there comes a point when, as a legislator, you have to do what's right. Mm-hmm. And he goes, in his mind, there's clear evidence that the public's being experimented on, and mm-hmm. And he's helping request a congressional hearing as well. So, but so far, he's the only one. And you would think, you know, California being one of our more liberal states,
I know,
that Boxer or Pelosi or some of the people from there would be
mm-hmm.
inclined
very
to listen to some of these victims, but they're not.
Mm-hmm. So what, can you go over again the differences between a real mental illness and someone who is a victim? What are the subtleties? What can someone look for in knowing this?
The first thing is in a schizophrenic. Schizophrenia usually happens in men between 18 and 25 and women between 20 and 30. So mm-hmm. most of these victims are usually professional people already in their late 30s or above. So mm-hmm. if the psychiatrist is trying to tell you you're schizophrenic, it fits into specific age criteria. Most of our victims do not fit that criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, delusional disorder is usually the term that most psychiatrists are trying to give TIs or targeted individuals. Delusional disorder has a 0.03% incidence in the general population. Now, a 0.03% incidence is a pretty small incidence of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have 1,000 members in Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance. There's at least 5 other organizations that have equal numbers, and more than that, that aren't affiliated with any type of group that are coming forward. So the complaints alone outweigh the percentage that, according to all the National Institutes of Health, say that delusional disorder should exist in. The other thing is that most schizophrenics hear garbled voices. They mm-hmm. hear what sounds like a multitude of people talking in a subway.
Mm-hmm.
This is very specific comments directed at the individual, talking about their placement in a room, what they're doing. A lot of times the victims will say that they're being exposed to open-ended questions, and that's meant to facilitate your thought pattern or process to go down an avenue so they will know what you're planning. And, for instance, they'll hear statements like, you're not going to be happy about... And then they'll stop, and they wait for you to finish the sentence going, well, what am I not going to be happy about? And that way, you're going down the pathway where they need to know what's already stressing you out or what your plans are for the next day or if there's something that you're worried about. That way they can capitalize on that pre-existing stress.
But how?
It's really important to know what the voices are saying, and that's been the biggest complaint from victims that have been exposed to psychiatrists. Is all they do is focus on the fact that you're hearing voices. They don't ask what the voices are saying.
Yeah, I can see. Yep. And that would be key.
The other key thing is the stalking.
Yes, and the...
You know, if you're hearing voices and you're being stalked and your place is being broken into, that's a pretty good sign that you've been targeted.
And then you had written, too, that if your relationships and friendships all become distant or strained for no apparent reason, wouldn't the reason be that the person is terribly disoriented suddenly and acting out of character, to put it mildly?
Well, there's two thoughts on that. One is that the victim is being put out of sorts, you're right. But the other thing we've noticed is that before someone becomes targeted, they usually be sure to start controlling what they see as your support system.
How do they do that?
Well, like I said, with the voice to skull and with the microwave energy, you can control someone's behavior. With subliminal messaging, you can usually control what someone perceives someone else telling them. So it's hard to explain, but I guess the best way to say it is that before they pick someone to target for harassment, if they know you're going to turn to a parent or to a loved one, they make sure to control that social network that you have, support system, to not believe you. And I've seen this in very extreme cases where you can bring in, I've had victims that said, you know, I brought my parents in or I brought my loved one in, showed them where the home had been broken into, showed them the busted lock, showed them the broken windows, you know, showed them where I had food tampered with or bottled water tampered with.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me and said, no, it's just, this is normal wear and tear.
But I still don't understand how the loved ones and the dear friends are controlled as well.
Well, as from a perpetrator standpoint, you want to control the social support system before you victimize someone.
So their thoughts are being controlled also?
Yeah, yeah. They
They
want the victim isolated. Almost all of these forms of brainwashing and mind control techniques that, like I said, stem back from the 50s, 60s, and 70s depend on social deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you have sleep deprivation, social deprivation, it makes it easier for them to get into your mind and control you. They want you sitting at home being harassed with no one supporting you. So they make sure to control the support system before they target the individual.
This is disgusting.
And that's all done through microwave hearing and through subliminal messaging.
And then you also write that you can experience burning sensations on your skin or internal organs, feel pinpricks on various parts of your body, and feel some type of energy moving inside your body, and head pains. And is that all part of the attack?
That's directed energy weapons, and that's another big common complaint. The people that complain of this can tell it's coming from the outside. I mean, it's a pulsating type of burning that is very obviously coming from the outside. It can include muscle twitching, severe headaches, where you feel the energy pulsating against the back of your head or the front of your head to cause the headaches, heart arrhythmia problems. And every victim will tell you that it is very perceivable as coming from the outside. It's not a normal physiologic feeling. We've even had victims that have had their bottoms of their feet burned to the point where there's indentations or visible burns in the skin. And the way that's done is by they usually break in, they put metal flakes in the bottoms of the shoes or in your insoles, and then they microwave the shoes until the metal heats up just like it does in a microwave oven burns your feet.
They just probably stay awake at night trying to think of ways to torture people.
That's exactly what they do.
It's just disgusting. Mm-hmm. It's just diabolical.
What percentage do you think is New World Order compared to just like a normal stalker that maybe like it's your ex-wife and I don't know why you would or whatever you would want to stalk somebody for, but what percentage do you think it is?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, it's, stalking by a disgruntled lover or an ex-husband or ex-wife has been common and for a long time. Unfortunately, just about everyone now has access to technology to make it a little easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
I really haven't studied the percentage as far as organized stalking compared to estrangement. I guess I would call it estrangement-based stalking.
Right.
But you know the technology for stalking now, even from an ex-husband or an ex-wife, has gotten so easy. You can go online and download programs off the internet that will allow that person to remotely dial your cell phone and use the microphone from your cell phone and the camera on your cell phone remotely without it being on.
Right, or your webcam also.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, look at that school. Where was that, in Pennsylvania?
Right. Yeah.
They were remotely activating the cameras on these laptops that they gave the kids.
Yes.
And I almost can guarantee you that was, sexual assault based.
And in Iraq, when the soldiers returned all their weapons or surrendered them, there were discussions around what had really happened and how were they being controlled. And
well, I don't know. I don't know if you remember the Branch Davidian problem we had here in Waco, David Koresh.
Right.
Yes.
Sure.
This was reported in Newsweek that they had brought over a Russian scientist named Igor Smirnov, who developed a lot of this, helped develop a lot of the voice-to-skull technology, and they wanted to use his techniques and his technology to beam the Charlton Heston voice of God into David Koresh's head to convince him to give up. Now, there's no evidence that they actually used it, but the FBI admitted talking to this scientist about using it, and that made it into Newsweek, a fairly well-respected news magazine.
I don't remember that. And I'm curious, how have your colleagues responded to this? I mean, not the psychiatrist, you're an anesthesiologist. But what?
Some of them are that know it's true. Luckily, I'm I guess well respected enough in my community that most of them knew what I was going through. They knew about the police reports. They knew my ex-fiance was being sexually assaulted. So they've been fairly supportive, as much as they can be. Unfortunately, for physicians or any licensed professional that has to be licensed by a state or federal government or governing agency, it's kind of tricky because, I mean, it's the coming up with the hard evidence for this technology is difficult. Mm-hmm. And some of the claims do sound so crazy, mm-hmm. You have to be very careful. Luckily, I've had quite a bit of support here. Mm. But there's especially the group that I exposed have made repeated attempts to discredit me and have made repeated attempts on my life.
I was going to ask you about that, if you've been threatened or impacted by this yourself.
I had the bolts removed out of the hood latch to my vehicle. My hood blew up on me going down a highway at highway speed. I've had bleach poured into my water softener at home trying to sicken me. And I've had bullets shot through my bedroom window.
Oh, yes. Well, you have been targeted.
Yeah, so that usually means you're pretty well on target with who you've identified when that happens, too. So that was, even though it's dangerous and it's been risky, at least it lets me know that I'm on the right trail.
And are you still being targeted?
Luckily, I made enough waves with by getting correct identities on the people doing it. That most of the stalking has stopped because I put their identities in front of the police department and the sheriff's department here. So if they had continued the stalking, which was very obvious, I mean, these were people who were sitting just outside my driveway, sitting just outside my ex-fiancée's condominium, standing outside her balcony and outside her patio. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's not surveillance from a distance. It is harassment. Well, luckily, after getting their identities and exposing them, even though we weren't able to bring them to prosecution, mm-hmm. we were able to bring forth their identities where if they got picked up for stalking now, they would be arrested. So that's why I tell victims, focus on the stalking, get your plate numbers, pictures. Get your identities, and report that, because that's where you'll get them. You won't mm-hmm. get them on accessing the technology.
Yeah. Did you think that yours was New World Order, or was it? Did you...
Well,
yeah,
I think...
That was amazing.
The thing as a whole, I believe, is New World Order, because... If you look at it from a control perspective, all of the governments are talking about depopulation. Mm-hmm. Global warming is really a population problem. That's what came forth at Copenhagen. If you're going to control the entire population, taxes and guns alone won't do it. You know, there's always going to be people in rural areas that are going to be resistant to taxation. They're going to be resistant to a military action because you'd have to find them, and they're going to fight, especially in Texas. Come on to some of these 6,000 and 7,000 acre ranches to take people's guns, there's going to be a fight.
Mm-hmm.
But this technology has the potential to control everyone. And Michael Persinger, who actually created some of the microwave technology that they use to control behavior, said himself that he could control every mind in the world with this technology.
He'd be able to control the American military, which we pay more for than the next 45 countries combined, and make it to be able to turn so that those people would turn on their families and kill their own parents and go ahead and put us all in camps or something. Is that
right? You know, we do have a unit that's already based here in the United States.
Their
goal is to quell social unrest in our country. They, mm-hmm. when the economy started to go down, and then the H1N1 virus came around, they stationed a unit here that is for the potential of martial law.
Yeah.
So again, you do think that the military would do that? They would take the side of the government.
They'll do whatever they're told.
Yeah,
many people do say that.
That's what I've heard too.
I can't imagine people shooting their own parents, but I guess that's part of the scenario.
It's scary to think about, but
or maybe putting soldiers in a field where
maybe
they're
just
far
gas
from
them.
Their
maybe
families.
Maybe they'll just put their families in the gas ovens,
or they're
on
the other side of the country
the
where they don't know their neighbors as well.
Well, exactly, and with this technology, it doesn't necessarily have to be soldiers. You can control any individual to carry out whatever you want them to carry out.
Yeah.
You know, if you know Timothy McVeigh,
you must need a heck of a server to keep all brains on.
No, there are three large satellites, and their capacity is phenomenal.
Yeah.
To track seriously,
multiple,
you have no idea.
Multiple satellites too.
It's it just not beyond those three.
Right.
But now I've got another something brewing. The census that's coming up. You mentioned that. People carrying guns in their homes, holding guns, and someone from the census comes in. And now, that information that they'll be gathering, the government, from the census taking, they'll have even more information about your home and the layout of your home and who you are on the forms. It's a short form and a long form. And this just occurred to me as we're talking. It's census time. Does that tie in at all?
Yes, if you look at the short really? Form is pretty benign, but if you get the long form,
yes.
it does ask you
There's
what guns you own, you know, how many restrooms you have, what the layout of your home is. And if you get on the 2010 census.org, they even tell you that for the first time in history with the application of the census, there's two things that are happening that are new. One is they plan to GPS every structure that houses human beings. When the forms are brought to you, there's going to be a person there with a handheld GPS unit that is going to put in the coordinates for your home. They want to be able to GPS every structure. So that already puts us at a little bit behind, because now we have technology to target you via satellite. Now they're going to know exactly what your coordinates are. The other thing that's troublesome with this is they're using school children. It clearly states on there that the children will be a important part of ensuring a correct census. A lot of the forms are going to be sent to school and sent home with the children. And to a lot of us, especially here in Texas, we're a little more conservative than California, maybe. That kind of smacks of Nazi youth, you know, the brown shirts. And
it does.
Because, you know, in Texas here, we love our guns. So that's not that's going to be a hard one to sell to people. And there was another bill trying to be passed. I think it failed so far. But they wanted the reporting of your weapons on the census form also was going to come along with a weapons tax, where when you filed your tax forms, your IRS forms, you would have to pay tax on what guns you owned. If you don't pay the taxes, then that would give them the reason to come into your home and confiscate your weapons.
Wow.
So, Ann Holder is talking about reenacting the ban on assault weapons.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I beg to differ with you a little bit in that, and yet I can understand it. All guns are taken, and we're under martial law, and there's no way to defend yourself and your property. And everything is being controlled. Now, can you say a little bit about the organization that you're working with?
Sure. I'm on the medical community with Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance.
Yes.
It's run by a great individual named Derek Robinson. He actually started this as a one-man operation some years ago. They have a great website. It's freedomfchs.com.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody who suspects that they might be getting victimized by this or know someone that maybe they previously thought was crazy, that is being victimized, you can go to that website. He has a great list of not only symptoms on the body that you may be looking at, but electronic disturbances that you see as well, because most of these victims also complain of their power being shut off and on, battery-operated appliances turning off and on their own, garage doors opening and closing on their own.
It's anything, like a ghost.
Exactly.
Being stalked.
Well, and here in San Antonio, it finally made the news in another story. There were two neighborhoods by an NSA base. We have three NSA bases in San Antonio now, so we're very, very, very protected here. There was two neighborhoods by one of the NSA bases who people's cell phones were acting up, their home wiring was burning out, their garage doors were opening and closing. This went on for a year before finally the NSA came forward and said, well, this is because we're using some new ground-based radio frequency communication system. And they're telling everybody to, matter of fact, March 1st, they shut it down for 24 hours and told everyone to contact the FCC to get some special filter that has to be installed on your wiring to prevent this from happening. But, you know, if they're saying it's a ground-based communication system, then it's probably not. Usually, especially with intelligence agencies, usually what they tell you is one thing, what it is another. So, but that actually made our local news. So it's going on, and it's real,
so
and there are some
levels.
Of us out here fighting it, and Freedom from Covert Harassment and Surveillance is one of the best organizations to educate yourself anyway.
And that's national. Well, it's
that's a national
for anyone,
organization.
Global, probably. And so to fight it, again, people need to be proactive, identify what's happening with not necessarily the psychiatric community or physicians, but with the organizations that you're speaking about, and to just keep exposing and talking about it and ignoring the symptoms.
ignore the voices. Symptoms and get on the websites. My website is www.satweapons.com.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the freedom from covert harassment and surveillance, because really educating yourself right now is the best defense.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to other victims who are victims advocates so you don't make the same mistakes that they have made,
mm-hmm.
mostly by, you know, trying to convince a psychiatrist that it's real. Because the more you try to convince them, the more of a diagnosis you're going to get.
Yeah,
and you might be lost
in that system.
Exactly, and hopefully we're going to, with this summit meeting coming up, that we'll be mm-hmm. able to put an educational packet together that will change some of that.
And hopefully we can get some congressional studies or...
We're
at
hoping,
some point,
and
yeah.
We're just hoping the corruption doesn't go all the way up to the top. We're counting on there being at least one decent person still in Washington.
And I'm also concerned about the toxic effects of these technological weapons. You know, the cancer-causing, just have any studies been done in terms of cancer-producing
illnesses? No, and that's what we're concerned about, too, because from a medical standpoint,
yes.
And I've said this on several other shows, that in medicine, when most of these people have been victimized for a decade or more, in medicine, the only time you see a study being done for a decade is a behavioral study or a cancer study. And that's the other thing we're afraid of, is that if this is eventually going to be used on the entire population, are the people being victimized right now being victimized to make sure that it doesn't cause weird cancers?
Yes.
If they're planning on using it for a population control device or technology, you'd have to make sure that exposing to low levels of chronic radiation, exposing directed energy, exposing to bombarded with radio frequency 24 hours a day, isn't going to cause a cluster of really odd tumors
mm-hmm.
or odd cancers. Because if you have one population all of a sudden show up with weird cancer that usually has a very low percentage in the population, then that's going to trigger someone to study that and figure out what's causing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that worries us, too. And mm-hmm. no, there have been no studies on chronic low-level radiation exposure. Most of them have been based on cell phone studies, and there's a big discrepancy on what...
Cell phone studies? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cancer-causing, yes.
Yeah, and what the Europeans say about the electromagnetic radiation from cell phones causing brain cancer
mm-hmm.
and what the U.S. says are two vastly different things.
I know. I've been following that myself, and I'm guilty of overuse of my cell phone.
It makes sense, too. If you've ever had your cell phone near a radio or a TV, you can, you know, it can be quite a distance away, and you still mess up the appliances around it. So there definitely is a lot of electromagnetic energy being radiated from it when it goes off.
Yes. God, the work that you are doing is immense and quite a service, and you've been very courageous in exposing this as well, tirelessly. There aren't many. You do have your own radio show now.
Yeah, we're on Republic Broadcast Network, and it's called The Control Factor. It's Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 11 Central Standard Time.
Mm-hmm. And it's a heavy topic, so what do you do for comic relief or to
balance? When I'm not practicing medicine or fighting this uphill battle, I'm usually asleep. I mean, I ride a Harley. Usually that's my escape, is just to get on the bike and go do some riding.
Gosh.
But you're right that right now this looks like a very uphill battle, but I think we've got some key players in place now to actually produce a study from a group of people with all of us with letters behind our names, you know, not to demean the people that are being victimized, but the bombardment of testimonials to congressmen doesn't seem to be reaching their ears. So we're hoping that when we get a collection of PhDs and doctors together that are publishing on this, that maybe, just maybe, will be listened to a little bit more, we're hoping, anyway.
I think this is just the beginning. You've exposed a real cancerous, festering wound. And when I first heard that you were going to be on another show, I heard New Breed Satellite Terrorism. I thought of the cameras that we're all subjected to now, and maybe on our cell phones, and then commercial advertising on our computers. I wasn't really sure, but I was not prepared for what you've exposed in electronic harassment.
The real challenge is the people that you're trying to appeal to, which would be the government, are the people that are trying to get you.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
There's almost no point in that.
Well, that's why we're hoping there's at least another Ted Kennedy out there.
They're supposed to be protecting us?
Yeah, we're hoping there's another Ted Kennedy or someone with enough caring that they don't want this to happen. And on the camera thing, I don't know if you saw today on the news, the state of Arizona, the people there have finally said, we've had enough with cameras in public places. They're actually looking at passing a bill there to have all of their stoplight cameras and highway cameras and everything taken down. They're tired of living in a police state there.
You know what's happened in Britain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that's just unbelievable. Luckily, you know, hopefully Americans won't stand for that.
Yes.
And that's why it's very important to stand up against the cloak of national security. Unfortunately, after 9/11, all they have to say is we're doing this to protect from another terrorist bombing. And everybody says, well, okay, I guess my privacy can be invaded if it's going to be for my protection. Well, in the long run, it's not going to be for your protection.
I know.
So,
have your picture taken at the airport? Those body scanners are now. They're being, I think, in Boston. They were just put in at Logan Airport. That's what I heard.
That's a big invasion of privacy.
And that's what I was thinking.
You know, those essentially see you nude. So
that's what I assumed you were going to talk about. But when you went in so deep to what was going on, I thought, I have to get this man on the show.
The technology we're dealing with is much more intrusive than that. So.
Yes. Well, you have really been enlightening, and keep up the good work and keep us informed. Let me know what's going on, and I'll put you on right away if you have some new developments or any time. I really appreciate the work you're doing, and boy, it's frightening, though. Terrifying.
Well, thanks for helping expose it, and I appreciate you.
Sure. You've been great.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was an amazing piece of information, and wow, I'm sure that all got us listening. It's a really good reason why we need to all be really vigilant over our own lives right now. I think everyone that's living, especially in America, in our generation, it's good for us to come to the point where we really realize it's up to us now, hopefully, to use our democracy to vote in a system that's actually beneficial to us and doesn't have any of these kinds of detrimental, insane things that are going on like that. Really, thank you so much for sharing that. And we're going to watch our vigilance as we go forward.
Oh, yes. And right now we have a little segment from, I believe it's Big Brother is Watching You. And we're going to be in touch with someone from Brazil. See if we can get this on. I have no idea what it's going to sound like. This is an experiment.
It'll be great.
Big Brother is Watching You is coming up. What is it? Here we go.
Fire on you. Think they don't, but the goddamn do. All she and I am.
Good afternoon. This is still Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz, and Cindy and Hope
are with you.
And then the third hour, we have a mystery guest. Yes.
Better than a mystery meet.
And we're going to be learning the ways in which America is entrenched in a war of rhetoric. Should be really good, so stay tuned. And now we have Rafael Moria, who was with us last week. He has so much to share, and he's working very hard in Brasilia, Brazil. And right now, as we're speaking this week, there is, in the Supreme Court of Brazil, judicial action against a quota for black students, and I believe Indians as well, at the University of Brasilia. And the quota has really worked well for the black population. And there's a party, the DEM party, that says that in Brazil there is no racial inequality. And in fact, there is. And there's a Supreme Court decision now that is looking at the deep inequities, economic, social, and educational, and the history of racism, slavery. And it not until this past week has the issue of racism really been acknowledged openly and publicly discussed. So we're going to learn a lot more about this, speaking with Rafael. Let's see if he's on. Rafael, are you with us?
Good afternoon.
There you are.
Good afternoon.
Good.
Good to hear you again. You're becoming a weekly guest. There's so much going on. And I have Hope with me. Her name is Hope for Peace, and she's the co-host here today.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much for coming. We're so excited to hear what you have to say.
Yes. It's historical.
Wonderful.
So tell us a little bit about the history of slavery and this Supreme Court decision. Case is being heard right now.
Right now. Then I'm going to start, we have to know a little about the history of the affirmative actions. How did it come? How did the affirmative actions start? For those who don't know the affirmative actions, you have to know a little after the Second World War, when there were lots of conflicts, independence conflicts, many countries in Africa trying independence, and many conflicts happening at the same time. Then one place, a special place for our discussion, the affirmative actions started in India, and during they were writing the Constitution of India, Gandhi with Nehru, the important figure of India, they were trying to talk about and to write the new constitution of the India after the British colonization. Then there were certain groups that were not somehow, they did not have healthcare, they suffered more with violence, they didn't earn much money as the other groups. Then there's one theorist, he's called Hadi Abdekar. He's from India. He creates the code for the Dalit. The Dalit is a caste. I don't know how to say it in English. Caste.
Caste. Yeah.
Caste.
Oh, the
Dalit is a caste.
Right.
They were the first one to be. They were the first group to receive this kind of this tender of policy, you know. And then after the Dalit, there were the Adavasis and other groups like this. Adavasis is like the Indian group of India. Then, it was done in the 50s. Then this discussion about affirmative actions, it is somehow spread throughout many countries, like Indonesia. Then it went to United States. Then we are having this matter here now about affirmative actions for black people, for Indian people. My university, where I study, I live in Brasilia, in the capital of Brazil.
Yes.
My university was the first one in Brazil to implement code with the gender of affirmative action exclusively for black people, because we had some cases of racial discrimination. In my department, where I study in Brasilia, I do anthropology. Then in my department, there was a case of a racial prejudice with a student, with a black student. Then from this case, some professors here, we had two professors, their names are José Jorge de Carvalho and his ex-wife, Rita Lara Segato, he's from Buenos Aires, he's from Argentina. They started to think how, they started to make a map of how the universities in Brazil are so segregated. For instance, they did a survey about how many black professors were in the University of Brasilia. It's quite impressive. We had 1,500 professors, teachers, and from these teachers, only 50 were black. Then 1% of them were black. And when we were talking about the students, they're less than 2% of the students of the Brazilian University, the University of Brasilia, were black. Then it's not only Brasilia, but when we see Brazil, it happens, this atmosphere, it repeats in many other states of Brazil. Then we had this issue, but somehow, for some people, it was not a problem, because we have the system here, we have to do exam to enter the university. In the university here, we have to do exam. I have done it 5 times to enter the university. I have studied like for 2.5 years to enter the university. Then they say, no, only the best ones are the ones chosen to enter in the university because you have to do the test. Then this test means that you have done certain points, and from this certain point you are allowed to be in the university. Then we started to think how this meritocracy system, how this system was segregating. Like here in Brazil, like less than 10% of the population is in the university, and less of this percentage are in the public universities. We have a lack of people, like many people here, like most people in Brazil are not studying in the university, and less. These numbers are awful when you are talking about the black people. It's awful when we are talking about the Indian people. Then this code system for black people started in 2004 in Brasilia.
Yes.
In Brazil. Then it spread out for many regions. Now we have many universities here in Brazil with affirmative actions, with different genders of affirmative actions. There are some actions focus on Indians. There are some that connect Indians with black people. Indians with poor people, black people with poor people. Then in the last decade of this discussion, we have more black students in the university than we had in the whole last century, you know.
So the quota system is working.
Somehow it's working, because I had some number that's quite impressive. Like here in Brazil we say we are not racist. But for instance, when you had, like, in the 50s in the United States, we had some laws that prohibited black people to do it with white people. Am I sure?
Yes.
Then, in the 50s in the U.S., we had more black people studying in the university than we had black people studying here in the 80s.
So what is the stance of this DEM party? They're saying...
The DEM party is like they are... This party is like the same one of the Arruda party. He's being judged in the Supreme Court. If he's going to be released or not, he's more than 50 days.
Released from jail, yeah.
He's in jail. And right now, while we are talking on television, they are discussing, and many... Then this party, which we are talking, they say there is no racism, that we are all equal, because we are... according to race, it doesn't exist, like in biology. Then they say, if there is no race, there is no racism. Then there is no black people, there is no Indian people, because Brazil is only one, they have one language. This is the kind of the monolithical scheme, like the monolithical theory, like we are one people, we are one language, we are one president, we are only one thing. And then we have, like, 180 different tribes, different Indian ethnicities in Brazil. We have different traditional communities. We have black people. We have people from Candomblé, from Afro-Caut. And these people are not recognized in the university. When we see the Brazil universities, they are spaces for white people, mainly the public. And when we are talking about the main courses like law, medicine, these courses are only for people that can pay good schools in order to study and to make an exam. Their father have invested all their life, like, paying language. They could have learned, like, how to speak French, how to speak English, how to speak Spanish. They had money to travel around, to make, you know. And it's, when we talk about the black people here, the numbers are really something you have to think in you. How these things are happening now, how these things, the numbers, it doesn't speak for itself. The numbers here, you have to put it in the history of Brazil. It's like what we are facing now. Tomorrow we are going to have the third day of the judgment of this trial that we are facing, you know, about the code system here in my university of Brasilia. Now, the last day.
The quota system, is it going to be abolished?
Yeah, they are trying to do it. Like, we are having it for 5 years, and the period of time of this quota system is for 10 years. After 5 years, they are saying that we are going to have a racial conflict here in Brazil, that white people are going to kill, no, that black people are going to kill white people. And they are making some comparisons, like, really embarrassing, like, they're comparing with, it's something near with the Balkans, that's what they are comparing, that we are going to have ethnical.
So it's very fear-based.
They are comparing with even to Rwanda in Africa, when we had this conflict with the Tutsis and the Hutus,
the ethnic wars and cleansing.
They are trying to create an atmosphere of fear that the society learned to see, oh, this code, we are only one country, we are importing this thing from the United States, because in the United States they are all too segregated, they have space for black people, they have space for, you know, for different groups. They are too segregated in Brazil, no, because we have the carnival, because we have this thing, we have soccer. Then we are so friends here. Everyone is so united. And these numbers that we see, that the black people here, they are targets of violence, police violence. Mm-hmm. They die more, like, they live much less.
Yes.
I am now with 25, like, the average of the black people is 21 years old, like, in some areas. The health system doesn't, like, black women are pregnant, they die more. They don't have assistance, they don't have assurance.
Yeah, insurance. Economically deprived. No opportunities, and they're living in a lot more poverty and absolute ghettos.
And somehow, it's a paradox. Like, we are having, like, some, we are celebrating in Brazil that in some years we are going to be the fifth economy of the world. But we have an overwhelming when you compare these two groups, the black people or the white people, we have this overwhelming distance between them. Like, that the white people, you can see here, like, if you go to Brazil, when you go to different parts of Brazil, you can see, when you go to university, you don't see professors or teachers, black teachers. Not even Indians. Indians are worse than ever. Like, in Brazil, we have quotas of 20% for black people, and we have this, it's not a quota system, but somehow it's a bonus given to each semester. 10 Indians come to the University of Brasilia, and we have, like, a kind of a number of 40 Indians now living, studying in the University of Brasilia. It's really, it's a shine. In fact, it's a shy action.
It's
we
have
to do much more to combat racism. We have to do much more to combat inequality.
Yes, it's just a beginning, and it's a successful beginning. And it sounds like some of the authorities are very threatened by this success.
Yeah,
and are now trying
to,
again, institutionalize the racism.
Because we have other countries here discussing, they are discussing codes for black, like in Colombia discussing codes in Bogota for Afro-Colombian people. We are not only in Venezuela, there's a discussion about it. Not only in Venezuela, but we are going to have a new census here in Brazil.
A new what?
Census.
Census.
Like,
we are too.
Yeah,
interesting.
Nice. And we are going to have, like, the number of black people is going to be much more, is going to be higher than the white people. We are, after Nigeria,
like
we are the blackest country in the world. It's because we had this slavery until 1888, we were the last country in America to abolish slavery. We had, for instance, in Rio de Janeiro, we had some market, black market, who sell slaves in there was one which was really famous called Valongo. They used to sell children, women, and black people from different ages.
And
it was here really it was the hugest one in America.
I
because
know.
Because we had 4 million of black people mm-hmm. enslaved here.
And for three-fifths of the nation's history, it's been under slavery. And you had emailed to me that it was just abolished really in 1887, and then the Republic was founded in 89. And it's still dividing Brazil. And now, with this Supreme Court decision, there's finally an opportunity to speak about the truth, the presence
like
of the racism that is so prevalent, but not really spoken about in Brasilia, in Brazil.
Yes. Brazil is like, what can I say about it? Like, when we're talking about the new sensitive that we're going to have, it's not only Brazil, but for instance, in Uruguay, they're going to make a new sensitive about, and for the last 100 years, Uruguay, they did not have made any survey about the black people in Uruguay. For the first, after 100 years, they're going to make a survey about the black people in Uruguay, not only Uruguay, in Panama. They're going to make a new sensitive in Panama, in other countries, in the black, like we have this Afro-American that is coming out now. This Afro-America in difficult countries, like in Colombia, not only the Afro-American, but the Indian America also, like we have Ecuador in Bolivia that has, they have done new constitutions that they have put Indian ideas, like the Buen Vivir, mm-hmm. which is a Quechua idea.
Yeah, the Quechua, they're organizing in Peru.
Yeah, in Peru, in Ecuador, like not mm-hmm. only Ecuador, in Bolivia. That's
Bolivia.
It's a continental movement.
It is,
and Brazil somehow is part of it.
Exciting.
It is.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You have to see that from this perspective. Like, what we're facing in Brazil, we had to do it like 100. Like, we have from the abolishment of slavery, it was 122 years ago. We had to have done this discussion 122 years ago. We have, and then only after all these years we are making, you know, we are quite like, we should have done it before, and now we can't postpone it more anymore. Like, we can't postpone because the numbers are really disgusting when you see the difference, when you see what Brazil is like, what's the portrayal of Brazil abroad, what's the portrayal of Brazil inside. It's a different country. Like, when the foreigners come to Brazil, we are going to see the black people. We are going to Salvador to see the music, the rhythm, like the samba. We are going to see. And when you see who are the people who perform the dancing, who perform the things, like the other Indians, not only the Indians, the black people.
The black people and the Indians.
And when you go when you go to see, like, who is the president of Brazil, is a black man, it's not a black man, it's a white man. When you go to the Congress, it's only white man. When you go to this position that public voice, you have this position that can have public voice, we don't have it. Like, the black people don't have public voice. In the Congress, there is only one minister.
Yes.
Wow.
Like only one black minister.
Gosh.
In Brazil.
So do you think there's an opportunity with this Supreme Court case to have more input, minority input?
Well, I think so. We are facing this trial now. In this trial, they have like chosen the minister have chosen some people to talk about this thing. There's specialists from many regions, from different teachers, mm-hmm. and different social movements. And we have 48 people were chosen. From 48 people, most of them are from São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. It shows that the whole debate about the Brazil, how we see ourselves, are focused only on two states, Rio and São Paulo mainly. Most of the people who were chosen are from Rio and from São Paulo. And the most scary thing, I was watching yesterday the audience about it, and there was only two black, today for instance, there was only two black people talking about this team. One of them, he's a professor in the University of São Paulo. He's from Congo. He's mm-hmm. African. Mm-hmm. And the other is Brazilian. One of them, his name is Tambengeli Munanga. He's from Congo.
Mm-hmm.
He was like in the University of São Paulo. In 20 years of the Department of Anthropology, he was the first black man to be a professor. And he's going to retire like in 3 years. And there's no replacement. We're not going to have a new black professor when he retires, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's like uh-huh. we are facing this problem. We are oh, facing sure. this matter here. We are, mm-hmm. It's like the numbers that we're facing. For instance, South Africa had more students, black students, than we have at this, right, this, like, South Africa had more students, black students, than we have now here in Brazil. It's like, and we say, no, we are trying, because we don't have racism in Brazil, it doesn't exist. People who say that thing is fantasizing countries like South Africa and in the United States. Over there are the places where they are racist, but in Brazil, no. In Brazil, we are a democracy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
how we advertise ourselves here, like, in, I think, the first step now, we are having an important moment to uh-huh. see, it's like our mirror, how we see ourselves in the mirror, how we speak about ourselves, mm-hmm. how, what's our
yes.
image, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's something we are facing now. It's something mm-hmm. near of the truth tribunal that was in South Africa, mm-hmm. we are facing now. In Brazil.
It's and a voice, it's a presence, it's the ability to take control over how you're perceived and who you are, over your destiny.
Yeah,
your definition of who you are, your rights.
We are talking about public policies, because if we don't exist, if there is no black people, mm-hmm. we don't have public policy for this group. If there is no Indian, there's no Indian land, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If we are all equal, this equality was like it comes from the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an idea of the French Revolution. It's written in the Constitution, but it's a horizon. It's not what happens. In fact, it's a horizon. We are not equal. When we see the numbers here, we are not at all. We are not equal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we have to do a lot of things that. We have a long journey to get to this point, to achieve it. And then it's not only this party that I was mentioning, them are the Democrats. They have actions against Quilombolas land. Quilombolas land, Quilombolas are the name that we give to the people, the traditional community that comes from descent from slaves. Some slaves during the 18th century and the 18th century mainly, they escaped from farms and they did this community in order to escape from slavery, and they have constructed this community which we call quilombolas. In other countries we have, in America we have in different places like this phenomenon, like we have something like in Venezuela, we have in Haiti, we have in,
yes.
in many. You know, we have the Palenques, the Cumbis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They have different things.
So right
and
now...
This, yeah, it, and despite they have an action against them.
Yeah, and it sounds like the corporations, the government,
yeah.
the wealthy, the elites are controlling who you are, where
yeah.
you can move your opportunities, what you can do with your life.
They deny the history.
It's about to explode.
Yeah, they deny, like, in the 19th century, and mainly in the 20th century, many German, Italians came to Brazil. They were, like, there were some, like, for instance, in Italy, in the end of the 19th century, if I'm right, I don't know, they were trying to unificate the country, Italy, Germany, and many of these people. They were not German at that time. Not, they were not Italian at that time. They escaped to Brazil. Mm-hmm. Then they had, like, they had, every, the government had public policies for them. In order to help them, the government gave them land, gave them place to stay, to be in a safe place. And they worked here, and they were like, we have the ideology that were not only in Brazil, but in, were happening in the whole America, that we were, we are like a country that we are not developed because we had too much black people and Indian. Then we had, we needed white people because we white, these white people, they have the genetics to development, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then they were brought here like an immense, they were like troops of immigrants from displaced from Europe. They came here, they are living like here in the south of Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
They came here and they had all privilege. And the black people,
mm-hmm,
and the descendants of and the African people, they did not have it. The government, like, they, during the slavery time, like, the percentage of, like the slave, they used to live like only for 20 years if it was, if they had a good life.
Wow, so, that's like, amazing.
Yes, like, yeah, we have, like, it's quite impressive. And they deny everything, like, they, because after the abolition, Brazil did not abolish slavery because they wanted, because,
mm-hmm,
we were suffering international pressure
because to become a modern nation.
Yeah, we are having pressure from England,
mm-hmm,
because England, they wanted to create a market, and they had so much slaves here that for England it was better to release them, to have a huge market, you know, to have people buying things.
It
was better to have, like, it's, yeah, not because Brazil, we are so conscious now that we are going to abolish slavery, no.
And
because
wasn't
we
Brazil?
Had pressure. We were pressured to do it.
Yeah, and Brazil was one of the last countries in America to abolish slavery.
We're the last.
And for anyone just tuning in, we're speaking with Rafael Moria about the history of slavery and how it's impacted the black and Indian populations in Brazil, and what Rafael and many others are doing to change that situation, truly look at the institutionalization of racism. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Sorry to interrupt you there. I've just been going on for about more than an hour without a break.
Nice.
Just announcing who we are here, and we're always looking for donations, and those can be mailed to FRSC PO Box 7811. So in this Supreme Court case, what is exactly is being determined right now?
Nice question. This action is headed by the Dem Party, which was I was talking about, but they have done a manifest.
The Dem Party, yes.
They have written a manifest to deliver to the Supreme Court of Brazil, and
yes,
this manifest is called the Manifest of Everyone is Equal in the Democracy Republic.
Which you know
and
isn't true.
It's the title. And this manifest is called the Manifest of the 113. And this manifest is signed by important people of Brazil. I think you might have heard about Caetano Veloso.
Yes.
You know the singer Caetano Veloso?
Yes.
He signed it.
Oh.
And not only Caetano Veloso, but many poets, many influential people that have access to the mainstream here, people that have access to magazines, that have access to television.
Mm-hmm.
These, not by anthropologists, by professors, they are a powerful group. They represent the high society of Brazil. They have from the 113, they are mainly from the south, from the São Paulo and Rio.
Yes.
And this manifest, it was delivered in the Supreme Court to against the court system, because that we are seeing, like, we are this the main point is that, like, we are equal. If we are equal, everyone's equal. Everyone can access the university because we there is no race. Everyone is equal in Brazil. That's the main point. And that they repeated, like, race is like a debate of the Nazis. And they compared the black people with the Nazis because they say that who defends these affirmative actions are Nazis. Like, then I am a black people, I'm black, they are Nazi, because I'm defending that the university have more black people. Like, it's a paradox here that
And it's, you know? It sounds to me that saying everyone is equal is a way of negating the success, again, as we spoke about the quota programs, and to abolish them. We know from what you're sharing with us that there is no equality.
There is no, not at all.
And they're just words. And it's frightful that this is being now decided in the Supreme Court this very week.
It's like, they have in the Supreme Court now. And, well, it's quite amazing what we have to hear there. We have so many specialists talking about, because in Brazil, we say that we are all mixed. We are a mixture of black, white, and Europeans.
Yes.
And we cannot say that we are black, we cannot say that we are Indian, we cannot say that we are white, because we are all this, you know?
Yes.
We are everything and nothing at the same time. We are everything, we can be the whole world and nothing at the same time.
How do you determine blood quota?
What?
How do you determine the blood quotas? You're this black, you've got this Indian, and you've got a little bit of white here, and how is that determined by the color of skin?
Yeah, we're all different, but we're all the same.
Here, like, in order to enter, I'm talking about the University of Brazil, in order to enter in the system, you have to declare yourself as a black people.
Mm-hmm.
You are not forced to call yourself black. If you, and then it's like the self-declaration system, you know, it's like, it's based on the owners' agreements. Like, because Brazil has signed many agreements since the 1948 that they agreed to come back to fight the struggle against racism. The last agreement was done in 2001, 2002,
wow.
It was in Durban, you know, the Durban meeting.
Uh-huh.
That they were heard to talk about xenophobia, racism, and the main project presented to Brazil in this Durban meeting was the code for black people.
Mm-hmm.
And this Brazil has signed many treaties, not only the local laws, the national laws, but international laws, saying that we are going to make programs, we are going to make action to combat, to fight racism. And the affirmative actions come this way. Because it's not against, it's like a complement of the idea of equality. In order to reach equality, we have to have these policies to adequate
to give you an entry, even into,
to give an entry.
And to give you voice and an opportunity,
exactly.
An economic opportunity as well, and educational, so that you can move forward.
Exactly. And
that's why the quotas have been working.
What?
And that's why the quotas have been so effective. They're having an impact, and it may be threatening.
They say, no, the quotas not the thing that we have. What we have is to invest in the basic education. That's one hilarious point, because this damn party, which was from the governor Arruda, he was stealing money from this education. And this party is saying that we have to develop education. Like, at the same time, that they are stealing the money from education, from health, from transport, in many areas, and they are saying that what we have to invest is in the education. What we have to invest is they criticize the idea of code, and they say that we need to create a social code. It's like so... It's a paradox. Like.
A social code?
A social code.
And what?
Only for poor people.
And what is that?
A social code, like, they mean if you, the thing is not the race, the thing is the how much you earn. The thing is if you are poor or if you are not poor.
Kind of like America.
Yeah.
Kind of like America. It was kind of a joke.
Ah, it's like what's happening in America.
Yeah, kind of.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah, right now?
Well, we're kind of divided up in that way, I would say, by what we earn, but probably not as systematically, it sounds like, as what could be potentially happening there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
because
nice.
No.
Not necessarily. What we are facing now, like, there are some studies here, like some studies done by the Education Ministry of Brazil that show graphics about even when the basic education is developed, the black people are still in the worst places. They still don't have access to the university. Still don't. Even when the basic education is developing, they have graphics about it. The white people are better than the black people. Mm-hmm. That's something like we have. Like in the University of Brazil, it was done a study to see to figure out this idea of social code. Then this professor, he did a survey. Then he studied the house of students here. The house of students in Brasilia is the place for the poor people. In the house of students, there were only 10 black people. And all the others were 10 black people from Brazil. And the other ones were from Africa. They had the interchange program, you know? And if this were serious, we need to have like much more black people leaving the house of students, which is the place for poor students here in Brazil. But it was not happening at that time. And when we go there, we still have like there's no black people living there still.
Wow.
Most of the black people are from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They come from Angola. They come from Guinea. They come from different parts of Africa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in the code system, is like, we have to focus on the things, like, if we have this racial discrimination, which, it comes from many years, in the history of Brazil, in different areas, like, during the monarchy, during the republic, during the dictatorship, we are supposed to have democracy, but this structure is a structure of long duration.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing for many years. It's not being moved. Not being.
Sure.
It's not dynamic. This structure is not dynamic. What I have to say, it's not in any. And when we talk about that, we have to see how Brazil faced the black people during all these years. Like we have, when we see the history of Brazil, then we have conditions to figure out why that thing is happening and how we should combat, how we should fight that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are not trying to repair the things that were done in the past. Because the things that were done in the past cannot be repaired.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the point.
No, it isn't the
point.
The
thing is the present. Mm-hmm.
We have a little bit similar situation in America, and our average personal wealth for white people in America, I think it's $48,000 total,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the average wealth for African American people is under $7,500.
$7,500
compared to $49,000. So $7,000 compared to $49,000. Just as an average, I read that on a study.
I think in the United States, it was in the 60s it was implemented.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Lyndon Johnson. It's not true.
Yes, that's true, but it hasn't helped as much as sometimes people might think. In our reality.
Well, they've been whittled away,
even in
the
America.
Quotas.
The main reason for that is actually home ownership in America. Home ownership was figured in for white people, and so that brought their average up quite a bit, and home ownership is so low among African Americans in America that they basically have no personal wealth on the average. It's really horrible, even with the black president.
I was reading something about it. The word, like, this Katrina tornado that devastated the black people over there. Yeah. Was written a text from David Harvey. It was mentioning that something like it's quite. I mean, I think it was in Alabama, something like that.
Yes, absolutely.
And it sounds like what you're struggling with right now. The universities historically have been privileged places for public discussion and to give you an opportunity for upward mobility and social ascension. And it's largely occupied by white professors and students. You've been working to change this, and you're struggling now because it sounds like in this case, the Supreme Court case, that's going to be taken away and whittled away, which is what's happened here as well.
Somehow, like, it's not only Brazil.
Not only here.
Like, we are facing this problem in many, many different areas here.
Yes.
Because it's, what I was mentioning in the last interview, like, during the Lula government, it was the time that more Indians were killed, Indian leaders.
Yes.
We have conflict with land, we have conflict with education system. For them, it's against the quilombolas and against code. It's like this. At the same time, simultaneously, it's against the land issue and against education issue.
Mm-hmm.
We have two spheres, like, to think about it. It's historically, these two spheres, the land and the education, are so are really close, you know? Are really close.
Yes.
It's like a kind of apartheid, because during the process of urbanization of Brazil, black people were losing their land. Indians were losing their land,
land, their language,
buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's happening with Paranau now?
With what?
With the Indians, which I told you, the Paranau.
Yes, what's happening with them,
yes,
the Paranau?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same party. It's the dam. It's the same party from Aruda. It's the same. It's against Quilombola. It's against Coras. It's against the Indians here.
Mm-hmm.
It's, how could I say that they are not racist? They say they are not, but...
No, this equity principle is being violated. Or they're saying the reservation violates the equity principle.
Yeah, of course.
And of course it doesn't. It's amazing the way they use words. In the next hour, we're going to be learning about that in the States, what's happening, how it controls a dialogue and debate and how we think. But what are some websites that our listeners can go to find out more about what's happening in Brazil and your struggles?
You need to learn. You need Portuguese to read it, I think.
Oh, that's right.
But, some
translation.
Translation. Yeah, you can do some translation.
Yeah.
A little bit. We can try.
The
we
ones
can try.
That you work with. That's understandable.
All the text,
Rafael. Yes.
It's published there. All the texts are published in the Supreme Court website, but in Portuguese. But if you want, I don't know.
So is there any way that we can assist you in your struggles?
Yeah, but there's a Brazilian community in the U.S., I think. You must know someone from Brazil, I think.
Oh, I've had a wonderful friend from Brazil. He was a
great... They can translate to you.
Yes, there you go. There you go. He could read it
yes.
for me, Marcus.
So what are the websites?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The Supreme Court website is... I'm going to speak in Portuguese, but then I will translate.
How fun.
Supremo Tribunal Federal. And I think the best thing is go to Google.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Google search.
Google search. They write STF.
ST as in Tom?
Mm-hmm.
STF. It's called Supreme Tribunal, like, it's like, it's the Supreme Court, like, Supremo, S-U-P-R-E-M-O, Supremo, just put O, instead of Supreme, just put O, Supremo. Tribunal, T-R-I-B-U.
N-A-L.
Tribunal.
Supreme Tribunal. Federal.
Federal. Exactly.
Like, Supreme Tribunal Federal. There are videos on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
All the text of the specialists are in the website.
Oh, super.
You can check it out. then I think it's like this thing. I'm being very succinct, but there are many aspects. There are many different roads to go by. You know, there are different roads, different thoughts. Like it's a philosophical debate, like a political debate, a social debate. Mm-hmm. It involves that jurisprudiction debate. You know, it involves many spheres. Like it's a complex debate here. Mm-hmm.
Very complex.
Yeah.
And the richness and the diversity of people, tribes, and traditions that are so alive in Brazil.
That's definitely
what we are trying,
but not given
like
a voice, and that's what's got to change.
It's a debate we need to have.
Yeah, well, what we are trying to do is like we are trying to say like we are not a monologue.
You're not a monologue culture, that's for sure.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very diverse and rich.
Excellent.
Well, we're going to have to end it here. We have the next segment of our program ready and waiting at the moment. But thank you again
thank
for coming
so
on.
Well,
hopefully,
Is afternoon over there?
Yes, it is.
It is. It's going on 4 p.m.
Yeah.
Pacific Standard Time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And
so
this will be going on, so my prayers will be with you for the rest of the week and onward.
Absolutely. That's
but now it sounds very historic.
Yeah.
Can transform the nation, truly.
Mm. Yeah. Then.
Yeah.
For me, I just have to say thank you for.
Thank you for coming on.
It was a great pleasure. I hope I might have. Because I speak too fast.
No, you didn't.
Oh, you're wonderful. Your English
is great.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah, good information.
Thank you.
Then I think we see you another time somehow.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh,
we'll have you
Brazil.
On again. Keep us informed.
Nice.
All right. Best of luck.
Afterwards,
blessings.
I would like to have the link.
Yes. Oh, I'll send it to you. You bet.
You got it.
Nice.
All right.
Nice. Bye.
Wonderful. We talk with you soon.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Ciao.
Ciao. Well, that was Rafael Morari again. I hope everyone could understand. I'm not sure if we had a cell phone or not. Whoops. Now I have a little bit of, not
Brazil.
Sure what this music, Brazil.
Brazil.
And we'll be back with our mystery guest to learn about.
So exciting.
Whoa, I like this. Why we're entrenched in a war of rhetoric. Here you go.
Hoje é dia de sol. Alegria de coió é curtir o verão.
Vem, Magalhães Rojão, traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer a maçã. Hoje é dia de sol, alegria de coió é curtir o verão.
Dê. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon. This is Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz, and I'm going to play a short video introducing you to our next guest. And that's the mystery. Let's see what we've got coming up here. Got Parrots Health Insurer Consultant. Woo, we've got some Brazilian going on here.
American people are worried that we're going to place government, when I say bureaucrats, between
that really great with the
themselves
GOP.
And their doctors. It's a major concern.
Let's get this guy on here. Whoops.
Put bureaucrats between a doctor and a patient. That's the concern that I have and so many individuals across this land have.
And the American people are worried that we're going to place government, or should I say bureaucrats, between themselves and their doctors. It's a major concern.
We do not want to interfere with the doctor-patient relationship.
Like this last slide, a second opinion. We're talking about strengthening the doctor-patient relationship.
But we've got to go back to centering our focus on patient-doctor relationships.
That Washington will overreach. They will put that congressional committee between the doctor and the patient.
Whoa, now that is just one example of the war of rhetoric that we're entrenched in right now. Whoa, and it gets even more ominous as we go on here. And there are two opposing sides embroiled in a massive battle for power. The corporate power grid is winning. Corporate-owned American media is their fully loaded weapon. The loser is humanity, poised to destroy our rare and beautiful planet and all of humanity for profit. They will not stop on their own. We must stop them. Thankfully, there is no violence needed to do this, just truth. As we know, the truth shall set us free, if it gets out. Now, this is the vision of hope for peace, to break into the collective consciousness with the truth. Ours may be the last generation with this choice. Now, again, I'm going to interview Hope for Peace, my co-host. She's our mystery guest. She's been working on an amazing documentary about Frank Luntz. Hope is running a local nonprofit created to flip the current power grid and put the American people back in power. She's working on a political documentary called 200 Million. The gist is this. If at least 200 million Americans don't get some real news, real facts, we're all toast. The misinformation machine run by the same corporations that benefit from it has no opposition. The who, what, where, and why of the corporate media power grid. Now, Hope, she's here with us. She's been here with me many times. The subject of this movie is Frank Luntz, the Republican word technician, who has crafted much of the language that has allowed Republicans to win the war of words that is American politics today. Hope, tell me about this documentary.
Greetings.
You've been doing so much work. Yes.
Wonderful intro. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yes. Okay. So the name of the actual documentary, you got it right, is 200 Million. And that is the premise. And actually what it does is it uses many stories that people are missing out on.
Uh-huh.
Really important things, material things that are happening on a daily basis that we just don't get a hold of that are important to us because all of our information is dammed up in the corporate media. They benefit from keeping us in the dark, and they're able to do it really successfully. And they do it, of course, pretty much all of us would realize how they do it, the different groups that are out there that are participating in that. And I did run across Frank Luntz is actually the first probably 15 minutes of the movie, I would think. Dick Cheney is also in the movie. Fox News is in the movie. A lot of great characters coming across. But Frank Luntz is about the first 15 minutes. And he is the most important person that you have never heard of. And
I hadn't until you
informed
me.
I asked pretty much everyone that I meet, have you heard of Frank Luntz? And I think so far I've asked that 102 times, and I've had 3 yeses. And 2 of those people didn't actually know who he was. Only one person out of that number wow. actually knew who. That's a pretty terribly small
and
percentage.
And he's so influential.
Yeah, so that would be an average of maybe just, you know, 1 in 100. That's not good.
No, it isn't, because
Frank
he's Luntz, has so much power.
Yes.
He works for Fox News, you said,
he does.
Too.
He's a Fox News contributor. He has coined many of the phrases which they have used very successfully to kill any legislation that would be detrimental to corporations involving regulation and beneficial to the American people. Any legislation that comes up like that, like
medical reform, credit card reform, financial institutions mm-hmm. reform, what's happening to them, the Tea Party.
Yes. He comes up with these cute phrases, and you will be flabbergasted when you realize what those phrases are. Let me read out a few to you. These are all Frank Luntz creations. He may not have invented them. A few of them he actually came up with, but he has heard them in other places and started to coin them and utilize them for the Republican movement. The first one is a big one. He utilized the word climate change instead of global warming. So the reason that we hear climate change so much now is because of Frank Luntz. And he found that global warming felt alarming to people. They found that word alarming. It seemed like something they should do something about.
They're more willing
climate
to support
change,
it.
was much easier to get them to oppose it. They were less afraid of it. And so it's easier to block environmental regulation if you're using the word climate change instead of global warming. And as we know, of course, that's had a great effect, because fewer and fewer people support any kind of environmental regulation anymore, which is probably really stupid.
Now, doesn't he do these studies with polls, with groups of individuals that mm-hmm. are, how are they selected? Do you have any information?
He's actually a pollster. That's his actual job description. And basically what he does is he uses certain phrases to see what our reaction is to the phrase. And if we have a negative or positive reaction, it doesn't matter if the phrase actually relates to the actual legislation in question that it's created to kill. It doesn't matter at all if it's fact. In fact, he will create the language and previous to the legislation even being written. For instance, Republicans knew they didn't want to have any kind of health care reform. I hate to say it, but year, I think it was in May, they hired Frank to do a study. And he came up with the idea, like we just heard all of the congressmen saying, that a government takeover of health care, he came up with that, would be something that Americans would oppose.
And it's not even what it's about.
The legislation hadn't even been written yet. So it's not like we're going to get together and negotiate and decide, oh, well, we'll take your ideas from here and your ideas from here. It's not that at all. The idea is, let's hire this guy who also works for Coke and Pepsi, and we'll get into all of that. And we'll just hire him to make up some words that we can shoot at the legislation to shoot it down and make sure that the opposition has no position to stand in. And when all of us look around at the political situation right now, we would realize it's been very successful.
It certainly has. So they've basically controlled the rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And then that means where the debates can go.
They're
They've
setting
limited
the playing
what can
field.
Be discussed.
They
yeah,
are
the
setting
field.
Up the playing field that we are playing on, and it is framed by Frank Luntz. Some of the other phrases that he has coined, they call them euphemisms. Climate change is now more acceptable than global warming, so no Republicans should say global warming anymore. We have done away with the word death estate tax and replaced that with death tax. And we're actually fairly close to doing away with the estate tax by calling it the death tax. And I'll get into more detail on each of these as we talk, but I'll just give you kind of the overall, just to give you an idea of how vast this is. Instead of oil drilling, he's replaced that word with resource exploration.
I've heard all of these.
Instead of gambling, now we have gaming. Instead of financial reform, we have permanent bailout culture.
Instead that of, I want to talk about
that's
a bit.
A good one. We'll get into that one first, probably. Instead of healthcare reform, we have a government healthcare takeover. Instead of vouchers, we have opportunity scholarships. Instead of eavesdropping,
vouchers didn't go over very well.
instead of eavesdropping, we have electronic intercepts. That's just a tiny list.
Electronic interception. We were just talking about that.
Yes, exactly.
Dr. Hall.
He has been working at this since 1994 in the time of Newt Gingrich. Frank Luntz actually invented the contract with America. And he actually framed that very similar to the way he's framing the argument today in this way. We are listening to the American people. We are, Republicans are the only party that is listening to the American people. That's what he's using today. That's what he used in the time of Gingrich, and it really worked. He helped Rudy Giuliani get reelected. He actually does quite a bit of international work. He's worked in Ireland. He's worked for Berlusconi in Italy and helped him stage a comeback. And if you're familiar with Berlusconi, that's
very
quite unfortunate.
Very influential.
So he's been around a long time, and actually what he's doing is quite amazing. So going back to financial reform, that's actually...
The permanent bailout culture.
Yeah, I had been studying and have been studying corporate media in America now for about 18 months. I started studying specifically how we went to war in Iraq and the difference between what the American public is told about that situation and the reality and the fact of the truth of that situation. Mm-hmm. And if you interview most Americans today, their information library in their mind about, you know, why we are there and different things like that is fairly bad compared to fact. And so that was where I really started my research. And that's kind of what the movie came out of. Exactly. It's what we're fed, kind of like cereal in the morning with a little spoon.
a little sweetener to go with it.
Yeah, it goes right into the brain. And
aspartame.
You know, and the problem is that people are basing their worldview on a system of information that's not true. Mm-hmm. So we're not basing our worldview on truth. We're basing our worldview on a lack of truth, and we can see immediately that that would get us into quite a bit of trouble. So it was actually in researching the financial reform aspect that I came across Frank.
It sounds like the debates are being slanted, or what we're being told, so that we support whatever their agenda might be.
I can make that really clear how that's working. Half of Frank's people that he works for mm-hmm. are corporations like Pepsi-Cola. So the same kind of panels that he would use to
marketing.
Sell you Coke, he would sell you to you for your political policy. So the same, and if you think about what's in your Pepsi isn't probably, you know, if you drink one soda a day, you have 36% more chance of getting heart disease when you are older. So he is selling you a detrimental product, utilizing his way of getting into your brain and seeing what you think. He uses exactly the same tactics, and he'll admit it. I could find a quote here if I could find it in my pile of notes, saying basically there's basically no difference between the way that he sells Pepsi-Cola and the way that he sells public policy.
Amazing.
It's the same thing. So I'm just going to take a minute for fun for
sure.
us.
Sure,
just
the marriage of corporate government power.
Well, there you go. Just to read out some of his, these are his corporate sponsors. These are people who will hire him as a very expensive marketing guru to help them find the right language to sell their products. Anheuser-Busch, AT&T, Bank of America, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Chase Card Services, Coca-Cola, Continental, Disney, eBay, Estee Lauder, General Electric, Hilton Hotels, McDonald's, Microsoft, Motion Picture Association of America, National Mining Association, NBC, Pepsi, Pfizer, Price Waterhouse, Procter & Gamble, Shell Oil, Southern California Edison, Starbucks, State Farm, Walt Disney, Tyco, Universal, and Wachovia.
They've all hired.
I don't see Bear Stearns in this, but Bear Stearns and Merrill Lynch
also
have utilized him. And so he has these corporate sponsors that pay him to invent this language. He's like a language magician. And then they use that language to go out and kill the reforms that they do not want to have.
And it's very effective.
Uh-huh. Like, for instance, in the current financial regulation that we're trying to mm-hmm. have would affect Merrill Lynch and Bear Stearns. Under that proposal of financial reform, big banks would face a new structure designed to police financial products, would prohibit predatory products and require clear forms and disclosures. And so they don't want that. So they hire Frank. And so what happens is Frank pens a memo. He penned a memo in January of this year. It's called Language of Financial Reform. It's a 17-page memo.
And where did you find that?
Well, I was just studying financial reform, which I'm interested in.
Yes.
I'm also doing a movie on the meltdown, and so I was doing research for that, and I had not heard of Frank Luntz. In 18 months of studying the current media machine, I had never heard
of
Frank Luntz.
You hit the jackpot. What a gold mine.
It blew my mind.
I bet.
And the reason that I came across him is I came across a certain phrase called permanent bailout culture.
Mm-hmm.
I was fairly familiar with the legislation that we're talking about, and let me back up just a little bit and inform everyone what that legislation is. Some people may know, some may not. To address the global economic meltdown, which we had in 2008, congressional panel got together, and they released a report a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was three Republicans, three Democrats, and three independents. And they found that they came up with 10 specific points where further regulation is very much needed to make sure that we don't have another meltdown. For instance, some regulation mm-hmm. of derivatives, some regulation of subprimes, some better tools in the toolbox for us to be able to utilize.
You know, all I can say is this should have been in effect ages ago, but
yes.
Nonetheless.
Yes,
absolutely. Nonetheless, this was progress.
Yes, exactly.
Until Luntz entered the scene.
So we had this report that came out in January of last year. And because of that, and of course, many, many, many economists state that we need regulation. If we don't have regulation, it's just like leaving the filthy rich alone in the room with the money and giving them no rules. It makes no logical sense.
And of course, they're going to use it.
And all that kind of thing. But if you look at what
coffers.
Actually... Yes, exactly. What just happened, and we can see.
And
really,
they're still doing it.
Absolutely,
they're using the supposed bailout money to invest.
Well, let's just use this as an example. How about Greece?
Yeah,
Greece's
tell me about
problems
Greece, I know.
Are specifically related right now to credit default swaps. And so that is another instrument which we, was toxic that we spewed out all
yes.
over the globe. So those would be something that would be regulated. And so this regulation started, they've started writing it in the summer of last year. It was ready for vote. It was very difficult to get it passed, but mm-hmm. because we have a Democratic majority, we did write up a bill and pass it in December in the House. So the House has passed a financial regulation reform bill.
And it's kind of stuck in the House? Or
where
is it
now? Next thing that would happen is the Senate would vote on it. And earlier this year in January, there was a huge fight about that. And Republicans were really saying that they were not going to support it on any level. There's particular parts of it. There's one particular group that's outside the purview of any other group that will oversee credit cards and different. And they don't want to have that. They don't basically want to have any regulation. So they hire Frank. So they hire Frank, and Frank goes and asks a group of, he pulls some people
get
and
the
he
big
says,
guns out.
He says, okay, guys, what would you never vote for under any circumstances? And they say, permanent bailouts. And they go, okay, that's what this is. This is permanent. Now, so he comes up with this phrase, permanent bailout culture.
And, I've been hearing a lot since January. Permanent bailout.
Kind of
CNN, even MSNBC. I want
to
hear what Keith
yes.
Oberman has to say about
Keith
permanent
Oberman
bailout.
Keith Oberman did an excellent little bit on it, on Frank Luntz. And you can find that on Keith Oberman's site, even just on YouTube. He did an excellent little piece on it.
Good.
The amazing part about that is the actual bill, of course, would be just the opposite. What it proposes, the reality, the fact, and the truth, is something the opposite mm-hmm. of a permanent bailout culture. Let me read a little paragraph that mm-hmm. explains kind of what it does. The bill would give the government the authority to step in and dismantle failing non-bank firms deemed so large that their demise could bring down the economy. Financial sector regulators have similar authority over traditional banks, but were powerless last year when Lehman Brothers Investment Bank and insurance giant AIG faced collapse. So what this does is it sets up one group, and it's paid for by large corporations that make, I think it's more than $50 million a year. They're levied a small tax. That's put into a fund. And should any of these large corporations grow so large and get into trouble, we have the ability now to step in and to keep that from being a systemic risk to the entire country. So we
paid for by big banks, taxes,
not by people.
Yeah.
And so it's actually the opposite. It's not giving them more money, American taxpayer money.
No,
so that
isn't.
They can continue.
It no wonder they're so threatened.
It's in fact exactly
they
the opposite.
They can't play their games.
But if you'd like to take a minute, and I'll tell you how to get there in a while, you can get on my YouTube website, and I have a playlist, and you can see all of the Republican congressmen parroting, and you can see them quoting verbatim, permanent bailout, permanent bailout, permanent bailout, permanent bailout. And you see it all over the net. I see it in my blogs. As soon as Frank puts it out in his memo, the Republican talking heads just run with it. And what's happened is it takes away support for reform. In fact, it takes us away from a situation where we have a logical debate. Mm-hmm. And one side says, okay, we would like to do this. The other side says, well, mm-hmm. we would like to do this. Let's find something in the middle. We do not play in that way anymore at all.
No, I watched Obama mm-hmm. struggling in the health care debates. And even he mentioned the sound bites when McCain was speaking.
Yes.
To no avail.
And actually, the amazing story about that is President Obama was in Hawaii at the RNC committee earlier this year in Hawaii. And actually, Frank Luntz was in the front row at one point when Obama was doing, I think, a press conference, possibly. And he actually pointed out Frank. And he was not derogatory or pejorative. And he just said, you know, this is where this been comes from, and we need to get away from this politics. We need to get back to an actual debate. Now, Frank was able to use that in his favor. And if you see him spin it, if you go watch it.
How did he spin it?
I can't remember exactly.
But it was really
egregious. He made it really, he took the focus off the point that the president, that Obama was making completely, and turned it to some other point about how we need lots of different viewpoints or something.
And I wonder if he's behind the number of distractions that are thrown up.
Well, I think lies are a distraction.
News.
To me, a lie is a distraction. If you
but looking
see
at fine points mm-hmm. that have nothing to do with the need for true reform.
Right.
They'll just pick one. Well, you have so many examples.
It works well. They just throw so much baloney out there that there's no way that you can knock it mm-hmm. all down. It's just a huge swarm of bad information. But I think if you can be really concise, I mean, you can see really clearly in a very short period of time that a permanent bailout culture is a complete lie. And if you really look at the facts of mm-hmm. the bill that is being proposed, it's beneficial to consumers like you mm-hmm. and me, and it's mm-hmm. detrimental to big corporations and big banks. It's going to regulate them, and they don't want that.
And that is not being conveyed.
No.
There's just no room for that.
What?
There's no space. There's only certain words are being used time and time again mm-hmm. without any deeper understanding.
No, the sound
what
bites
does
that
mean?
You will hear.
They're just sound bites,
mm-hmm.
exactly.
Yeah, sound bites put
no
out by...
No analysis or uh-huh. deep discussion.
No.
There's no opportunity for it. No room.
No desire to inform the public. Mm-hmm. Just misinform the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be for us a big difficulty in the long run. And especially Frank applies to so many different... they have used this tactic on so many different issues. For instance, let's go next to healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You just heard the senators on the floor... parroting, you don't want the government to get between you and your doctor.
Oh, yes.
That is from a Frank Luntz
has
memo.
Has nothing to do with it.
Well, the interesting thing is Frank has actually
right
said
now,
specifically...
Right now, the insurance company...
yeah, he said...
is between you and your doctor.
Mm-hmm. He was asked
if you can even get near a doctor.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Your insurance company is getting between you and your doctor
to.
Right now.
Right.
So there is
yes.
definitely an entity between your doctor. Anyway, money...
Money.
Is getting between you and your doctor. It's not like there's nothing between you and your doctor. So
yeah.
there's many levels where it's just plain silly.
People are going bankrupt over their
yeah.
medical expenses, and we all know that.
Right.
And that's rarely even being discussed.
Oh,
or if it
really?
Is, it's, the answer is not to...
It's twisted and turned.
Have a government reform. Mm-hmm. It's to go into the emergency room be taken care of.
Okay, let me tell you.
That
one
was
of
the Republican answer at one point.
One great Republican answer is preventative care. Look, if you people just don't get sick, we won't have a problem. No, I'm serious. That really is one of their tactics.
And then there's a bill coming out. McCain just sponsored in the Senate to have the FDA oversee our herbs and vitamins, our alternative health care.
Yeah,
trying to get someone on to talk about that,
that would
too.
Be great. Well, last year, in May of last year, there's a New York Times Magazine article that was done, interview with Frank Luntz. And, of course, May 09, none of the legislation was written so far for health care. We had some general ideas that, you know, that's a little bit less than a year ago. And so the legislation itself had not been written, but the memo had already come out to get rid of it. And so
do what you have to do, guys.
I guess.
Get Frank.
Frank Luntz was interviewed by the New York Times Magazine, and the reporter asked, is a government takeover of health care, which is the verbiage that you're using, is that a correct description of the president's health care reform? Frank's answer was, well, we don't know what he's proposing. Whatever it is, we want to avoid it. So I think it's just, you know, as a starting point, it's good for Americans to understand where our political debate actually is.
Yeah, where it stems from.
In reality, we do not have two sides with two different ideas who are going to balance each other out.
Absolutely not.
We have two sides at war, and this gun is loaded with lies, which are shot directly at legislation and work spectacularly. You can see in the healthcare debate.
Yeah.
The interesting thing was when we had the really good roundtable, you know, about a week ago, Republicans were still parroting exactly these Frank Luntz points.
And they got away with it, though.
Yes, they did. They got a huge amount of political traction on their side. And unfortunately, political traction on the far right often equates to political traction in the middle, because independents and undecided people hear these murmuring government takeover. You know, standing in line, death panels, and
the death panels.
And so then we find ourselves in the situation where most people supposedly oppose healthcare reform. And so that's the platform, you know, that they stand on. And it's obviously working. So I just want to point out who is the author of that
public
insanity.
Public opinion polls supposedly are opposed now to medical reform.
I'd love to ask the same people if they actually understood what those reforms were before they opposed them, or if they had some
single payer to public option. And now that's been abolished.
If you even look on the front page, the GOP also has a healthcare reform potential bill. It's like 9 points only. 9 specific points that
Do you have it in front of you?
I don't.
I'd be curious to see what that is.
But on the front page of the GOP website, HTTP, GOPleader.gov, so GOPleader.gov, on the front page, you can click on these tabs. It says, Speaker Pelosi's government takeover of health care will destroy small businesses and jobs. And you can read that PDF. Then Speaker Pelosi's government takeover of health care will hurt seniors. And then you can read that PDF.
So they're targeting specific populations and they're instilling fear.
Oh, absolutely.
Take away everything you
and
have. Will.
Government takeover is a Frank Luntz euphemism that he made up. It's his little creation.
And I'd love to be able to, to go to those sites, and I will, and to see what they're actually saying will happen and what it's based on. Any facts, any solid research.
Mm-hmm. I would love to have that looked over, too.
That can be your next video.
Yeah, we'll be definitely working on that. Well, it will be part
of
the movie.
Where do they come up with these studies? Frank, who does he gather?
No, they're not studies. They're not studies. They try to get, I don't know exactly how they came up with that in terms of Republicans, but in terms of how, and Republican policy, in terms of how Frank comes up with his ideas, it's very easy to see. And anyone who's interested, and I really think, honestly, non-conservative people, which would be potentially 60% of us, all of us need to take just 10 minutes and familiarize ourselves with what's actually going on. That's going to be the first step.
And you've done a lot of that work. And you streamlined it. You don't have sound bites, but you've spent hours, days.
Yes, I have.
Going over all. I could watch Fox News to that extent, or a lot of it, but you've picked it apart for the rest of us.
Yes. And so if you will, we'll give you my website at the end. It's actually Hopeful
Peace. You can give it right now in case someone
has to. Yeah, it's really easy to find. You just pull up YouTube, and in the search, you just put in Hope for Peace Now, all one word. Hope for Peace Now, all one word. And you'll see results that are me and my videos. And so you can find my channel that way. And right on the front page of my channel, you'll see a playlist called Frank Luntz Word Technician. And that playlist has about 35 YouTube videos.
He needs to be exposed.
Oh, yes. So you can take a few minutes and you can see how Frank portrays himself. He has a company. He's the word doctors. He's very, he has no problem being out there. He's really proud of his work. And so you can actually go join one of his panels from his website and be part of that. So it starts out with
him. He's one of the Fox talking heads. Isn't he a consultant?
Yes, he's more than a contributor, actually. He is being utilized by Fox in their media. I don't even know what you'd want to call it. I'm sure I could say it on this radio station, but I don't know. Their media insanity. He is utilized in this way. He brings on these groups of people, and you can see the panels if you get on my YouTube playlist. And he will ask people what is their reaction to particular things, like the healthcare summit. So he got people together to get their reaction to the healthcare summit, and it almost sounds scripted. And in fact, one of the people that's in one of the groups that he does, the polling groups,
somewhere in the country.
Yeah, somewhere in the country.
Does he pop in somewhere else?
Yes, he pops
from
in
Boston
later.
To
he's in one
Seattle,
group in one
I have
month,
moved.
And then he's in another state in another month in another panel. So, actually, if you watch them, you just can tell immediately that they're scripted people. But they'll use them on Hannity to really, and they'll say these are half Obama voters and half McCain voters. These are half Democrats and half Republicans, and every single one of those people is hating on Obama and our current policy in some way. And they let them speak and they give them the mic, and then Hannity will get on and say, wow, you know, this is what's going on in America.
And is he responsible for these polls that are now coming out and saying that just about everyone feels that Obama is not doing well and it's time for a real change?
Okay,
I mean, I've been hearing that more and more.
I'm sure
in January
everyone,
the influence
yes.
is phenomenal.
Exactly. That's exactly
they keep
the
saying
same.
Something enough times over and over again. If it's said repeatedly, the American public, like Sheba, eventually.
I'm looking for my notes because I could actually quote. I could quote Frank Luntz on that, and he actually is in an interview with Katie Couric, and he says, you know, the more that you say something over and over and over, the more that people will accept it as being fact.
Yeah, old propaganda.
So he admits it. He admits that he believes he can change a paradigm. He actually understands what he's doing.
Well, actually, he's been successful.
Highly successful.
From what you're saying.
Particularly on all of these, on anything that you're looking at. And we've only just scratched the surface
so
far. And
the death tax versus the inheritance tax.
So the main things that you would be familiar with right now that he has personally killed, that he has loaded up his propaganda gun and shot his bullet of lies, and the stuff is DOA, would be financial reform, healthcare reform.
What's DOA?
Dead on arrival.
Oh. I should know.
Shot dead, comatose. Healthcare reform, financial reform, global. This one impacts people more than anything else is the climate change.
It has.
I'm going to read a couple statistics that I looked up today. In 10 of 09, no, I'm sorry, in 4 of 08, 44% of Americans polled thought that global warming was a serious issue which needed immediate attention. In 10 of 09, it was down to 35%. In terms of whether you think global warming is an actual issue or whether it's made up, in 4 of 08, 1908, 71% of people polled believed that global warming was a real issue. And in 10 of 09, it's down to 57%. So you can see the specific effect of Frank Luntz. It's the Luntz effect. Maybe that's what I should call the movie.
The Luntz effect,
yes. The Luntz effect. You can't say the Frank effect because he's not being frank. Maybe not being frank is the name of that movie. I don't know. But those are the specific statistics that you can see in terms of climate change. And actually, he framed the climate change memo, which came out in 2003, it was called A Cleaner, Healthier, Safer America. But within that was verbiage that you could utilize to kill any kind of environmental legislation. So how killing environmental legislation makes us a cleaner, safer, healthier America, I have no idea. But he completely gets away with that. And since that time, actually, he has changed his thinking on climate change since that time. And you can see fascinating interviews, the Katie Couric interview that's in my playlist, which you can get to really easily when you get on the Hope for Peace Now website on YouTube. And the interviewer will ask him specifically about how he could come up with climate change and, you know, be able to change, detrimentally affect the perspective of Americans. And then now he's changed his mind about it and he's really comfortable with it. He just basically says, well, that's what I thought then. And it was great language at the time. And, you know, whatever they do with it is really up to them. And now he's actually a proponent of environmental regulation. But unfortunately, the current trend is to really state that global warming is a hoax. I see that all the time. The standard issue opinion of the right is that global warming is simply a New World Order takeover, conspiracy, and there's absolutely no way that man is having impact on the earth. Unfortunately, because of this misinformation, people do not support environmental regulation. Republicans do not vote for environmental regulation. On an average, 80% of the time, they vote no for all environmental regulations. As if
they want to, largely they're supported by the corporations they're funding.
Well, so we know that.
Yeah,
so they don't know that.
You're
completely right. Yeah. They don't know that. And
hopefully
so it's almost as if Shell would just stop polluting on their own.
Yeah.
It's like one day, the coal companies are just going to go, oh, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't put this stuff in the ground
anymore.
That's insane.
It is. We need regulation.
If we do not get off this course, we are all toast.
Yes.
My children are not going to have a viable planet to live on.
Exactly.
And so on many levels, on the level of financial.
It's very serious.
It's very serious. Very, very serious. And all of us who are alive right now in this generation, we get the great chance to
precipice.
Do something about that. It really, it's on our shoulders. And we get the chance to be great. And to stand up as a country, to be informed, and to vote in our own best interest.
And if
we
take responsibility for what's happening.
Yeah.
And you're doing it right now by creating these incredible videos and doing all this research and now documentaries.
Mm-hmm. The documentary should be out in July, so we'll have another show on that in the future. Frank has a new book out. So he's very mainstream. You'll see him, even though you've never heard of him.
We ought to get him on this show.
I really think we should invite him. I really do. I really would like to
do
that.
I'll do it.
That would be a blast.
It would. I'll do it.
I'm not sure.
We could try. Yes.
It's worth a try.
I can think of a few.
So he has come out with a new book.
Considerations.
That came out in January of this year. And it's called What Americans Want Really, Really. And one of the chapters, it's just from the polling, people doing the little knob, you know, saying, oh, I react well to that. I don't react well
graphs.
To that. Yeah,
and then
the
you see blue for Obama supporters and red for,
that's
I'm
Frank.
Not sure who they're supporting, independents or.
If you're a Republican. That's Frank. Yeah,
and it changes
exactly
with every
Frank
word.
Does.
I wonder how they can gauge it so quickly and so subtly.
They have a little knob on their lap. And if the knob is turned far to the left, it's something that they don't like. If it's turned far to the right, it's something that they like, and anywhere in the middle. So the person sits there with the knob and turns it, and that's how he sees what's happening in your emotions and how you're
feeling. And then they're all gathered at some point and tabulated immediately.
Yeah, it tabulates it immediately.
Across.
That's how you see the O'Reilly.
I remember those during the elections.
O'Reilly, Beck, and all of the right talking heads, all of them, Imus, Savage.
Love those.
Beck, all of them utilize him. And he will be, I'm going to predict right now, the main focus of the coming elections this year. They are going
this
to utilize
really
this.
This is really dangerous to a democracy.
Highly dangerous. It's very Goebbels. There's a video on my playlist about how he's very similar to the Nazi information keeper, and it really is. It is completely the same thing. You wouldn't. I mean, most people wouldn't realize that in America today we would have this level of malinformation, misinformation. But it's really prevalent, and it's putting us in a position this November, obviously all of us know, mm-hmm. where it could very well win mm-hmm. this war that we are in. And so that's why our movie is coming out on July 4th, which is going to be Tea Party Day. And it's going to be called 200 Million.
Countering Tea Party Day.
And so how we're planning to market it is we're planning to market it to all of the peace groups, all of the groups who would have a vested interest in seeing this stopped. Mm-hmm. We're going to give them a free copy. Mm-hmm. And we're going to ask them to have a big event. We're going to all watch it together, like mm-hmm. a family movie night.
Just blanket the nation with
blanket
it, Hope.
Blanket the nation with
travel.
All. Yes, utilizing.
Distribute it.
And people,
widely.
You know, even if it's just in
I'll
your living
you.
Room. And we'll take donations. It'll be a $5 suggested donation, but it's by donation
well,
for people
to get
going.
In.
And, yeah, so that way they can raise money and we can get the movie out there. So that's how we're going to be distributing it. And
why not? So mm-hmm. you'll distribute it before July 4th.
July 4th is the premiere date, specifically because of the tea parties. So
it would
you'll
be
have
great
both.
If you could have a heads up on the tea parties.
Yeah, we could get there ahead of time.
So maybe.
Beat them out. I don't know. We'll see when it's finished. So, yeah, the next really subject that we were talking about in terms of like just coming up with different euphemisms, one mm-hmm. of his most successful is the death tax. For many, many years, it's always been called the estate tax. And, mm-hmm. and most countries have an estate tax. It affects estates over 3.5 million, in which the total estate was not given to charity and it was not left to a living spouse. Mm-hmm. So it really affects about 1% of Americans.
But it's a hefty sum.
That's taxed.
Yes. But yes. It's a hefty sum, yes.
Mm-hmm. And it actually adds quite a bit to tax revenues. It's actually a huge chunk if it is done away with that stays in that upper 1%. Or actually, that's, I think, the 15%
percentile. That's what I mean.
Uh-huh. It lets it stay up there instead of making its way back into the, you know, into
yeah, public
our,
good.
Right, into our financial system. Even Warren Buffett supports the estate tax. Now, once he named it the death tax, it's just about that we're about to be rid of it. Because no one supports the death tax.
Just the sound of it.
And it's really fascinating when you see Frank interviewed, I mean. Because it's very easy for him to stand up and say that death tax is much more accurate. And he is actually being, he claims, Orwellian in using that word.
Blatantly. Admits this.
Blatantly.
Is that what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. He claims that death tax is much more truthful.
Pride.
It's a much more viable word to be using. I saw him talk about this again, I think, with Katie Couric. And unfortunately, I've never seen an interviewer say to him, yes, but death tax only would apply to everyone. Estate tax only applies to 1%.
Oh.
So it isn't. If someone used the right argument with him, he wouldn't be able to get away with it. But most people that interview him, you know, interviewers nowadays, I think that they're looking for probably, you know, being able to sell their interviews. They're not looking necessarily to be argumentative.
Truth. Yeah.
It's not, you know, real hard-hitting journalism at mm-hmm. all. So he's able to get away with it.
Well, they have corporate funds to
yes exactly it's all part of
take
well,
care
goes
of
back to
their advertisers mm-hmm. need to be acknowledged and
it's that corporate media
they may
system.
Be out of a job
exactly and
they,
they've worked a long time to get their reputation and to get where they are and to you know build up their financial background and mm-hmm. so they don't want to put that in jeopardy mm-hmm. they're more than likely to continue riding in the bus and not say anything about it. And unfortunately, the bus is going off the side of the hill.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have to
stand up.
And
they're pushing it, actually.
Yeah. We could get into that. What's the gas in the bus that's pushing us off the hill?
You're going
hot
into the
air
gas.
From one of the sides of our... here's a good quote.
Seems to be working now.
Here's a great quote from Frank Luntz. He was asked, I think this was Katie Couric again, I can't remember. You believe that language can change a paradigm? His answer, I don't believe it. I know it. I've seen it with my own eyes.
And what was her response?
They don't say anything specific. He went on in this. He said, The public reacts differently to climate change than global warming. Global warming is more frightening to the public. Global warming is something that has long-term consequences to it. Whereas climate change, to Americans, is a little bit more benign. I'm sorry, is there no long-term consequences to climate change?
That was her question?
No, that's my statement.
Oh, yes, of course.
I'm adding that at the end. But that's his statement. That's why he feels comfortable. And, you know, I have pages and pages and pages. He has... some of the other people that he has worked for, he's worked a lot with
Israel.
So
what he's doing, he's using language as a benign factor.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it takes away the truth behind what's actually happening or the consequences, the awareness of that.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. He finds out what you want to hear. And then he
tells
you.
Or what he wants you to hear.
No. He finds out what you want to hear. He finds out what you want. What do you want? What do you think? What makes you feel good about your position? What do you want to hear? Whatever it is that you want to hear that makes you feel comfortable, he just points at his product and says, well, that's what this is. Mm. Even though they may not be related to each other.
And they often aren't.
And, no. Like Pepsi.
And you and I have talked about that, and we've seen that in many instances.
Mm-hmm. He's worked quite a bit with the Bush administration. And, you know, he's been around just forever and ever and ever. Here's another good Frank quote. Frankly, the single best way to kill any legislation is to link it to the big bank bailout. I mean, he'll just say it, you know, flat out. Here's a few more. These are amazing. He really does claim that he is Orwellian in the sense that he uses language which is more clear. And he gets away with that. Now, in fact, he's Orwellian.
Well, sure.
In the terms of what he is creating is exactly the 1984
his salary
scenario.
Comes from. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here's, mean what you say and say what you mean. That's one of his euphemisms that he... Look
Hardly.
People in the eye and tell them the truth.
Big lie.
That's something that he stands
I
on.
Often...
It's not important what you say. It's important what people hear. That, he says, is the best thing he's ever written. Going on to something like gambling. I mean, it's all over the place. What happens is a corporation wants to up their sales. They go... hire Frank Luntz, and Frank finds the warm and fuzzy words that people love to try to make their product more acceptable and have more widespread use. So he was hired by the Gambling Association. I'm going to call it gambling because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. To find a good way to give gambling a better persona, a better, people to make it more socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. So he decided that the word gaming.
Make it fun. Give away your money.
Gaming is a much better word. And you can hear this one in the case.
Play a game. Bring your children. Mm-hmm. They can watch the Disney show while you give us your millions.
If you can only stand to watch one interview on that playlist, because a lot of the interviews are Hannity and they are Beck and they are O'Reilly and they are people like that. And if you can't stand to watch those people, which I completely understand, you might try drinking alcohol.
There's often
first.
A twinge of arrogance.
Just a twinge, just a tad. Go to the Katie Couric. The Katie Couric is 45 minutes. And she asks him about this gaming issue. And I think it's a wonderful little back and forth. She's not as hard on him as she should be.
Mm-hmm.
But he basically says, you know, when you go to Las Vegas, you don't just do gambling. You go to restaurants and, you know, you go to shows and you do all these other things.
That's part of gaming.
He has these insane and ridiculous reasons why.
He may be speaking some truth, but it has nothing to do with the question that's Mm-mm. being asked.
If you were being
he's
very
diffusing
clear,
it.
Just because there are restaurants in the casino, it doesn't mean the people aren't gambling.
Right. And that's what she was asking, and he found a way of going around it.
Now, think about it for a minute. When was the last time you saw the word gambling in advertising?
Well, I'm not the one to ask because I don't usually.
Yeah, but if you
watch
kind of
television,
think
like it has been a while.
Or if you think up on the casino, you know, you see the
gaming.
Signs for casinos. It's not gambling casinos anymore. It's gaming casinos. Okay, that's Frank Luntz. That is Frank Luntz.
He infiltrates so much of our society,
and it's completely acceptable. So what it does is it changes our complete paradigm. We get off a field where we're working in truth and fact, and we get into a field where we're working in pure advertising.
And emotion.
Emotion.
Feeling
creating
good.
Ideals. All kinds of things which are not connected
to fact and reality. And if we all kind of stand back for a minute and think about the politics that we're in right now, we would say possibly that rings true in politics right now, too. We have gotten off of a playing field.
We're a consumer culture, and he's
I'm thinking specifically of the healthcare debate that we just had.
I was just thinking of, that pharmaceutical.
Well, he's been hired
by
he was asked who hired him to write the healthcare memo, and he wouldn't say who it was. It'd be lovely to find out who it was. I'd like to know who funds all of his memos, but I haven't gotten that far yet.
They're working fast and furiously.
Here's a good example. When Obama had the healthcare roundtable about a week ago with everyone around the table, Republican Eric Cantor had the healthcare bill. It's tall. It's 2,800 pages. It's the healthcare bill for America. It's going to be big. You know, we want to write it in such a way that there's no potential lawsuits. That's why they're particular about the verbiage on every single page, and it's really long. You have to make sure when you make legislation, you can't be sued so that people can get around it. So that's part of the reason why it's so tall. So Eric Cantor was giving a really Frank Luntz-based, propaganda-based argument. And he's thumping the healthcare bill and, you know, 2,800-page healthcare bill. And he keeps going on and on and on. And when he's finished, Obama says, well, you know, that's just the kind of political grandstanding that we, the American people, don't want us to do. If we took some of the Republican ideas that we've been talking about and wrote those into an actual bill, it wouldn't be any smaller. And that's completely true. Yeah. If they actually put their bill together, it isn't going to be any smaller than that.
That's a beautiful example,
Hope.
And
that's true. But at the end of the entire summit, when, let's see, it was Bonner
so and much
the one with the little Waddle, anyway, two of them came out, Waddle and Bonner, came out to be interviewed, and what did they talk about? They said 2,800-page healthcare bill 15 times. All they said was the same government takeover of healthcare.
It's not going to change.
They simply parroted all of the things which they've learned to say which are successful. They are not interested in making any kind of legislation which actually will address the issues that we have.
And they're not being called on it
either.
Never. I rarely hear it.
The way that this media machine is set up right now.
They won't be on the mainstream media.
Well, of course not, because the mainstream media benefits from it.
I know.
So they're never going to tell us the truth.
It's all the more reason why your video, your documentaries have to get out.
Yes. Support the movie. So I'll tell you one more time where to find me. And, you know, if you're a YouTuber, send me a note. It's really easy. Most of us know where to find YouTube. It's youtube.com. So you'd pull up YouTube, and right in the top of YouTube, there's a great little search, you know, where you write in what you want to search. So just type my name in there. And my name is Hope for Peace. And then the word now. So all one word, Hope for Peace Now. Put Hope for Peace Now in your YouTube search engine, and then you'll find my website. And along with, I have a Frank Luntz playlist, which will actually play you one Frank Luntz video after the other. And you can skip to the next one if you get crazy. But it is a subject that people really should look at. And there's some other great media out there right now. I really would suggest to you, if you're interested in the corporate media situation right now, Frontline has a wonderful special called The Persuaders. And it talks about how corporate media is becoming more and more intrusive and is going to be becoming more and more intrusive from here forward in all of our personal lives. And Frank Luntz is in that.
I'll have to look at that.
You'll get to see that. It's an hour and a half. And, you know,
well, PBS, worth it, though.
Frontline through PBS, Frontline is one of their, you know, they put something out, I think, every week, is one of the best journalistic integrity. I mean, I'm sure they're not perfect, but if you want to find some general things about
it. And you've done your research.
They have some stuff on the Meltdown that will just absolutely freak you out. But yeah, you can get on, and actually we're always open. This is a community project. 200 million is a community project. So anyone who would like
to help.
That's
the name of the documentary.
200 million now. It was called Dick Does DC. for a while.
You've got bits and pieces of that in here. We talked about that.
Yeah, we did. It uses Dick Cheney. About 20 minutes of it is about Dick Cheney. And actually, Dick Cheney is a much more fun subject to talk about.
Well, you've included
him. I just saw this
great... You can bring him back, resurrect.
Yeah, we will. We'll get into that. Mm-hmm. I saw this great little kind of poster someone had made of like Republicans. And there was a button and it said, I love Dick. It just cracked me up. Anyway, so get on the website and, you know, drop me a note and be part of the movement that's going to be starting. Once the movie comes out, as far as I can see, independent media is the only way to combat this machine, and we need something big. So I'm going to read to you, because I know we're trying to finish up, huh? Cindy's over.
Well,
to fix the
we're not able to download.
Oh, gosh.
Palestinian News website is not coming up. And then Free Speech News, uh-huh. The only thing that's available right now is yesterday's. So I'm going to be playing yesterday's. Today's, for some reason, has not come up yet.
Lovely.
And then we have Informativo. And then I guess we can play a little bit of Democracy Now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've covered at least the main points. And I just really hope that anyone who is interested in having a future, yes. having a planet for their children to
yes.
live on, having some kind of financial system that benefits all the people who are involved, will contact me. So I'm going to read something really quickly.
Yes.
Really quickly. To discover to the world something which deeply concerns it and of which it had been previously ignorant. Mm-hmm. To prove to it something that it had been mistaken on some vital point of temporal or spiritual interest is as important a service as any person can render to their fellow human beings and the most precious gift which could be bestowed upon the people of the world. And so that's what we all want to get together and do now. So I'm looking forward to meeting all of you, holding
yes.
hands, and going forward together.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Gina.
Oh, you're welcome. And you can come back anytime.
Yay.
Co-host and share
right.
more of what you're doing and keep everyone informed, because it really is about taking back our language and learning who we are. As Raphael was speaking
exactly.
about last week, Eldon Taylor,
mm-hmm.
there's so many. I can't emphasize it now
Most
enough
excellent.
These days. And I do want to apologize because for some reason the Palestinian News website is not available and Free Speech News only has available yesterday's news. Sorry, Dennis, but this is what's coming on. And then we will have Informativo. And that is today's. We're lucky there. Thank you for listening. And I'll be with you next week. See what we can get here.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up on today's newscast, same-sex couples line up in Washington, D.C. on the first day to apply for marriage licenses in the Capitol. States across the country are targeting public spaces to save money. New York plans to close state parks and historic sites.